Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 29th, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our gospel reading. We're in the Gospel of Mark, and Luke. We're in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 12. In the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trode one upon another, he began to say unto his disciples first of all, Beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Therefore, whatsoever ye have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light, and that which ye have spoken in the ear in closets shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. I say unto you, my friends, be not afraid of them that kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. But I will forewarn you whom ye shall fear. Fear him which after he hath killed hath power to cast into hell. Yea, I say unto you, fear him. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 farthings, and not one of them is forgotten before God? But even the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. Also I say unto you, whosoever shall confess me before men, him shall the Son of Man also confess before the angels of God. But he that denieth me before men shall be denied before the angels of God. And whosoever shall speak a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But unto him that blasphemeth against the Holy Ghost, it shall not be forgiven. And when they bring you unto the synagogues, and unto magistrates and powers, take ye no thought how or what thing ye shall answer, or what ye shall say, for the Holy Ghost shall teach you in the same hour what ye ought to say. And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spake a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do, because I have no room where to bestow my fruits? And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater. And there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall those things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself, and is not rich toward God. And he said unto his disciples, Therefore I say unto you, Take no thought for your life what ye shall eat, neither for the body what ye shall put on. The life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap, which neither have storehouse nor barn, and God feedeth them. How much more are ye better than the fowls? And which of you, with taking thought, can add to his stature 1 cubit? If ye then be not able to do that thing which is least, why take ye thought for the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, they spin not. And yet I say unto you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If then God so clothed the grass, which is today in the field and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O ye of little faith? And seek not ye what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, neither be ye of doubtful mind. For all these things do the nations of the world seek after, and your Father knoweth that ye have need of these things. But rather seek ye the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell that ye have, and give alms. Provide yourselves bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that faileth not, where no thief approacheth, neither moth corrupteth. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Let your loins be girded about, and your lights burning, and ye yourselves like unto men that wait for their Lord when he will return from the wedding, that when he cometh and knocketh, they may open unto him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, that he shall gird himself and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch, or come in the third watch, and find them so, blessed are those servants. And this know, that if the goodman of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched, and not have suffered his house to be broken through. Be ye therefore ready also, for the Son of Man cometh at an hour when ye think not. Then Peter said unto him, Lord, speakest thou this parable unto us, or even to all? And the Lord said, Who then is that faithful and wise steward, whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household, to give them their portion of meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Of a truth I say unto you, that he will make him ruler over all that he hath. And if that servant say in his heart, My Lord delayeth his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidservants, and to eat and drink and to be drunken, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him in sunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. And that servant, which knew his Lord's will, and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not, and did commit things worthy of stripes, shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall be much required, and to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. I am come to send fire on the earth. And what will I, if it be already kindled? But I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how am I straitened till it be accomplished? Suppose ye that I am come to give peace on earth? I tell you, nay, but rather division. For from henceforth there shall be five in one house divided, three against two, and two against three. The father shall be divided against the son, and the son against the father. The mother against the daughter, and the daughter against the mother. The mother-in-law against her daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And he said also to the people, When ye see a cloud rise out of the west, straightway ye say, There cometh a shower. And so it is. And when ye see the south wind blow, ye say, There will be heat. And it cometh to pass. Ye hypocrites! Ye can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that ye do not discern this time? Yea, and why even of yourselves judge ye not what is right? When thou goest with thine adversary to the magistrate, as thou art in the way, give diligence that thou mayest be delivered from him, lest he hail thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and the officer cast thee into prison. I tell thee, thou shalt not depart thence till thou hast paid the very last mite.
Okay. Okay, before we get started, I think tonight we're going to be putting on a video in a short while. It's a very short one. It's a video I had seen quite some time ago, and it was brought to my attention recently as we're putting together the foundation study, which hopefully will be up soon. And it's a really good study to prepare people who are first coming in and aren't familiar with much of anything. But anyway, before we get going to that video, first want to see if there's any announcements that need to be made or any questions that need to be...
I don't have any announcements, but I do have a question, and one was sent to the regular address, but it does have a couple of questions in it if you want to do that one too. Okay, first question. I have heard many times on this show that legal education needs to be taught in the schools. I believe the law is written with an eighth grade level and wanted to know if you will consider starting a petition that there be a mandatory curriculum requirement before one graduate from high school as to the federal and their state constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the rules, policies, and procedures of the federal courts. One needs to understand the history of laws, of what the law is and what the law says as to the following rules of judicial canon, ethics, local federal U.S. codes, criminal, and what it takes to remove a bad attorney from a case or a judge from the bench. Being this info will now be before the parents, I believe we can make a tremendous difference within the current society from which we live. Will you consider starting a petition of such?
Well, it's up to the people to step up and do what needs to be done. But, you know, there's quite a few questions in that statement there. First of all, you know, the law. What is the law? That's the big question. What is the law that we the people need to know? And ultimately, it is really the law of the heart, and you find that in the Bible, ultimately, because that's the law that we're under. We're under the Word of God, under God's law, particularly focusing in on the first five books of the Bible. We are so structured as a nation, but the entire Bible, of course. But even those without the Bible, the law is written into the heart. People know right from wrong. They know when an injury had taken place, and they know what needs to be done in order to rectify that problem, to find a proper restitution for the injured party. And that's the job of 12 individuals that sit on the jury. They are the tribunal, and they are the tribunal that is to be in a court of law. No other individual is to sit as judge. No judge, no elected or appointed judge, is not to sit as the tribunal in a court of law. That's the people alone. So we have to define the law. Black's law speaks of 51 jurisdictions. And so each one of those jurisdictions have a law unto themselves. We have equity and we have law. The equity in the United States is the U.S. codes, and I believe there are 57 U.S. codes, and each one of those codes apply to a certain government agency or commercial activity, but it does not apply to the people. Their penal code and their and their criminal code, whatever you want to call it, does not apply to the people, although they have applied it to the people, and we've accepted that because we believe that it applies to the people. And as long as we live in that reality, believing that fiction is law, it is. And that's why an education is required to change this nation. That's why an education is required in order to bring back our nation back under the law, back under the Constitution. Only the people can save America. We're waiting for the military to make a move, and I do think that's going to happen very, very soon. I think it's probably going to happen after the holidays. And I think all hell is going to break loose at some point after. And I don't think it's going to be far into it. Because I do think things are coming to the head, and panicking is taken place by those who have seized power a long, long time ago and are ready to lose power. And they're going to do everything they can. They will release any weapon they have. They will cause any chaos they possibly can in order to disrupt the news media that would bring forth the truth, in order to prevent themselves from being arrested, in order for them to continue to hold on to power. We've lost power a long time ago. And I guess a good point or a good time in history that we can look at and say, well, that was the point that all was lost. And and it was getting lost, over the centuries, two centuries. The revolution never came to an end, and it continues, and it has continued covertly for almost 200 years. But now it is becoming overt. Now people are starting to see. But that point in history, I think, that really marks the point of the end of any control at all by righteousness, and I think that was the assassination of Kennedy. Now, of course, as I said, it's really the assault has been coming onto this, onto our law, onto our judicial process, onto our political process, all the way back in the beginning, going back to 1776. And the assault upon the colonies to destroy the natural law that was in the colonies took place in 1750. But I don't want to get too deep into that. But get back to the law. You got to ask yourself, what is the question? What is the law? Law is written in an eighth grade level. That's not true, depending on what law you're looking at. Law of the heart, you don't really even need much of an education. You need experience of life and a little bit of maturity. And you don't need a high education to understand right from wrong as far as judging in a court of law for an injury or something of that nature. The law that is written in codes, U.S. codes, which is man-made law, it's referred to as statutes, codes, regulations. That is written, I wouldn't say that's written on an eighth grade level either, because they like to hide a lot of things, and sometimes some of these words get a little sophisticated and have a heavy meaning, and of course law is constructive. It's built in one point above upon another, upon another, upon another. All law is constructive. But what we need to understand is the principles. We need to understand the foundation. We need to understand the difference between law and equity. We need to understand what a republic is and what a democracy is, and the fact that we are not a democracy, nowhere near a democracy. We are a republic. And it's unfortunate that people that are very highly educated continue to call us a democracy and not a republic. So that kind of tells us we have a serious problem. You know, I listened to some speakers in from Hillsdale, for instance, the president, highly educated individual. He's a ferocious reader, understands the Constitution, but he fails at the preamble, the most important part of the Constitution, the part that makes that document a common law document, is the preamble. You know, we had an individual here last week, and he's welcome to take the mic if he wants to say a few words about it after what I have to say. But we had an individual who was talking about that the preamble wasn't part of the original Constitution. There is no evidence that that ever was the case, ever. And it couldn't be produced to me. And it's important that I bring this up for the sole purpose of the fact that I just said the Constitution is not a common law document or cannot be accepted or thought of as a common law document without the preamble. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. That puts we, the people, above the Constitution. It puts the government, all of the different agencies, all of the individuals in elected office underneath that Constitution. And again, getting back to the fact that we're a republic, We've given them very specific instructions. We've given them boundaries, what they can write law on, and if we didn't say it, they can't write it. So law is, you know, if you go into Article 1, Section 8, you'll find that the legislative powers have 18 powers. One of them is to write law on the other 17. They've written a lot of law that we've never given them power or authority of. And they get away with it because why? How do they get away with all this? Because we, the people, are ignorant. I speak to myself first. We are ignorant. And we have to learn and understand and come out of their world of fiction. So we have to take back the law. We have to take back the courts. So the people need to become educated in order to do that. Jefferson said that it's necessity for the people to have a proper education. And without that proper education, you cannot have liberty. Liberty is not something that you sit and think about and you can easily come upon it. You can see it easily when it's laid out. That's clear. But liberty runs deep. And there's foundational ideas or thoughts that you have to have in order to really understand and appreciate liberty. But there are some really great statements out there. For instance, one statement that comes to mind, I'm trying to think who said this, I don't remember, but we are not under the laws of men, we're under the laws of God. The question comes, are we going to live under man or are we going to live under God? There is no other choice. That's who we are. We are a natural law republic, the only one in the entire world. There are many republics. Russia's a republic. China's a republic. Iran's a republic. Iraq's a republic. Many, 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 I think there's like 200 republics in the world. But there is only one natural law republic. And we're the second one in over 3,600, I think it's 30, let me think, 16, I think it was 1600 BC or 14, maybe 1400 BC, somewhere, I think it was 1400 BC, is when the first natural law republic appeared on the face of this earth, and that was Israel. And it lasted for 400 years, and then they lost it. And it was seen no more until 1776, which initiated the beginning and created a nation in 1789, which, of course, is the United States of America. The principles laid down and the protection that is required that this government is really, you know, given the job for everything they do, anything they write, any law they make, they have to apply it, the principle of the preamble. And let me just read that. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice. So this document was written in order to form a more perfect union. And that is becoming a natural law republic with all 50 states. Establish justice. Ensure domestic tranquility. Provide for the common defense. Promote the general welfare. And secure, the most important one, and to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. And this is what makes it the common law. This is what makes it we the people do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So we have to understand what law is. And law is simple. You know, you could take anybody totally uneducated, okay, and just give them the basic principles of their liberty. We put together a book, as a matter of fact. It's called The Jurist Handbook. And if you read through that, okay, that's what we orientate the jury with. And you read through that book, you really get a good understanding of what law is. You need no more to understand what law is. You need a lot more knowledge, of course, to understand how to control a government, how to have government by consent. But as far as sitting in a court of law, you need only to be read the fundamentals. And once that's done, then it's all of the heart. People know when something's been done, something that's wrong. And they know what needs to be done to fix that wrong. And in most cases, it doesn't require a jail sentence. It requires restitution. That's what common law is about, not putting people in jail, but restoring the injured party. Sometimes it is for putting people in jail, but they really overuse that way too much. The injured party never gets restored. Never, not in these civil law courts. And, of course, they've robbed us of our natural law courts and put us into civil law courts. So, again, there are 51 different jurisdictions. Each one of them have its own court. Each one of them has its own statutes, codes, or whatever you want to call it. And but then there is only one law. So there's 50, you know, what would you call it? Well, again, they'd be laws of men, ultimately, okay? I wouldn't call it all equity. Administrative courts, if anything. Unlawful courts, if they're trying to fine or incarcerate, because only a court of law can fine or incarcerate. You cannot lose your liberty or any of your belongings without being brought first through due process in a court of law. So none of these other courts can fine or incarcerate. They do. Town courts fine and incarcerate. They have no power or authority. County courts, in most cases, well, actually, county courts do have certain authorities to fine and incarcerate, but they're operating under civil law, so ultimately they're operating illegally. So town, village courts, any of these other administrative courts, all the equity courts, they run, they don't have the power to fine or incarcerate, yet they do. But anything time a criminal action comes upon anyone, whether the person is working in a government agency or not, then they must be brought into a court of law to be judged by their peers. And they first have to be indicted by their peers. And that's the process of common law. And these are the things that we need to know. We need to know that we, the people, are living in a land of fiction, in a land of Oz. And it's time to wake up. And it's time to, you know, come out of our sleep. And that's one of the reasons why we're pushing forward so hard this Committees of Safety. And while I'm on that point, let me just say, you know, we are having a seminar. I guess that's the word we use in seminar. I looked the word up to make sure it was a good word to use. It is a good word to use. So we're having a seminar. It's going to be this coming Saturday. So anybody in nearby counties that would like to join us, and then we will assist you in your counties. Hopefully other people in your counties will come. Enough people from your counties will come to be able to spark off a committee of safety right away. But you can't have government by consent, and I am absolutely convinced of this. And I challenge anyone that has anything that can deny this, that can bring something else into its place. We, the people, cannot have a republic, a government by consent, without being active on a county level, without committees of safety. Now, committees of safety have many different names, and, you know, we did a PowerPoint video on that, which talked about our founding fathers and how they used the committees of safety in order to create this nation, how the pilgrims used the committees of safety. And in different times, they called it different things, but it was the same thing. Ultimately, the committees of safety was the most popular name for this thing. And the militia was part of that whole process, the committee of safety. Everybody in the committee of safety was part of the militia. And all of the people were expected to participate. There is no way to save this nation. There is no way to secure liberty. I challenge anyone to show me any other way other than going through the process of committee of safety. So this Saturday we will be talking about that committee of safety and the structure of that committee of safety and how we can put it together and how we the people can have government by consent and give the basic knowledge that the people need to understand and realize that they need to step up and do their duty and take control of their nation or lose it. Liberty is not free. And I think we're going to find that out tonight as we listen to this, watch this video that I'm going to put on right now. Liberty came with a price. And we're going to find that out in a minute. Any other questions or comments or anything?
No, there's one other, but I reviewed it, and I don't think I can explain his question. So
Okay. Maybe that person could resend their question and reword it or something. Okay, tonight, this is a very short one. And like I said, I saw this a while back, a couple of years or so back. It was very powerful, and it was brought to my attention to be put into our foundational study, and it fits perfectly into our foundational study and what it is. And that is the Star-Spangled Banner, as you never heard it before.
There was a lawyer once, his name was Francis Scott Key. He penned a song that I'm sure you're aware of. You've seen it. It's in most hymnals throughout our churches. It's called the National Anthem. It is our song as an American. We go, however, to a ball game. We stand in our church services and we sing the words of that song, and they float over our minds and our lips, and we don't even realize what we're singing. Most of us have memorized it as a child, but we've never really thought about what it means. Let me tell you a story. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer in Baltimore. The colonies were engaged in vicious conflict with the mother country, Britain. Because of this conflict and the protractedness of it, they had accumulated prisoners on both sides. The American colonies had prisoners and the British had prisoners. And the American government initiated a move. They went to the British and they said, "Let us negotiate for the release of these prisoners." They said, "We want to send a man out to discuss this with you." They were holding the American prisoners in boats about 1,000 yards offshore. And they said, "We want to send a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. He will come out and negotiate to see if we can make a mutual exchange." On the appointed day, in a rowboat, he went out to this boat and he negotiated with the British officials. And they reached a conclusion that men could be exchanged on a one-for-one basis. Francis Scott Key, jubilant with the fact that he'd been successful, went down below in the boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, men. And he said, "Men, I've got news for you tonight. You're free." He said, "Tonight I have negotiated successfully your return to the colonies." He said, "You'll be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of your chains." As he went back up on board to arrange for their passage to the shore, the admiral came and he said, "We have a slight problem." He said, "We will still honor our commitment to release these men, but it'll be merely academic after tonight. It won't matter." And Francis Scott Key said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, Mr. Key," he said, "tonight we have laid an ultimatum upon the colonies. Your people will either capitulate and lay down the colors of that flag that you think so much of, or you see that fort right over there, Fort Henry?" He said, "We're going to remove it from the face of the earth." He said, "How are you going to do that?" He said, "If you will, scan the horizon of the sea." And as he looked, he could see hundreds of little dots. And he said, "That's the entire British war fleet." He said, "All of the gunpowder, all of the armament is being called upon to demolish that fort. It will be here within striking distance in a matter of about 2.5 hours. He said, "The war is over. These men would be free anyway." He said, "You can't shell that fort." He said, that's a large fort. He said, "It's full of women and children." He says, "It's predominantly not a military fort." He said, "Don't worry about it." They said, "We've left them a way out." And he said, "What's that?" He said, "Do you see that flag way up on the rampart?" He said, "We have told them that if they will lower that flag, the shelling will stop immediately. And we'll know that they've surrendered, and you'll now be under British rule." Francis Scott Key went down below and told the men what was about to happen. And they said, "How many ships?" He said, "Hundreds." The ships got closer. Francis Scott Key went back up on top and he said, "Men, I'll shout down to you what's going on as we watch." As twilight began to fall, and as the haze hung over the ocean as it does at sunset, suddenly the British war fleet unleashed. He says, "The sound was deafening. There were so many guns that there were no reliefs." He said it was absolutely impossible to talk or hear. He said suddenly the sky, although dark, was suddenly lit. And he says from down below, all he could hear the men, the prisoners, saying was, tell us where the flag is. What have they done with the flag? Is the flag still flying over the rampart? Tell us. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into the shelling. Every time the bomb would explode and it would be close to the flag, they could see the flag in the illuminated red glare of that bomb. And Francis Scott Key would report down to the men below, it's still up. It's not down. The admiral came and he said, your people are insane. He said, what's the matter with them? He said, don't they understand this is an impossible situation? Francis Scott Key said he remembered what George Washington had said. He said the thing that sets the American Christian apart from all other people in the world is he will die on his feet before he'll live on his knees. The admiral said, we have now instructed all of the guns to focus on the rampart to take that flag down. He said, we don't understand something. Our reconnaissance tells us that that flag has been hit directly again and again and again, and yet it's still flying. We don't understand that. But he said, now we're about to bring every gun for the next 3 hours to bear on that point. Francis Scott Key said the barrage was unmerciful. All that he could hear was the men down below praying. The prayer. God, keep that flag flying where we last saw it. Sunrise came. He said there was a heavy mist hanging over the land, but the rampart was tall enough. There stood the flag, completely nondescript, in shreds. The flagpole itself was at a crazy angle. But the flag was still at the top. Francis Scott Key went aboard and immediately went into Fort Henry to see what had happened. And what he found had happened was that that flagpole and that flag had suffered repetitious direct hits. And when hit had fallen, but men, fathers, who knew what it meant for that flag to be on the ground, although knowing that all of the British guns were trained on it, walked over and held it up humanly until they died. Their bodies were removed and others took their place. Francis Scott Key said what held that flagpole in place at that unusual angle were patriots' bodies. He penned the song, oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, or the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that the flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet fly and wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? The debt was demanded. The price, it was paid.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early night what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the pale fight for the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's great wings, the flames bursting in air, the night, there are flags of steel there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave? For the land of the free and the home of the brave.
Okay. Well, that's the price our founding fathers paid. And, you know, there's another video I want to play. I'm not going to play it tonight. I might play it next week. And it lists what the price of liberty really was. Most of the people that signed that document, the Declaration of Independence, didn't make it. They lost everything. And all we have to do is give up a little of our time. So that's all we have to do. We don't have to go out there and lay our lives on the line, not with what's coming down. I mean, if we were heading that way, I would hope that most people would lay their lives on the line to fight for liberty, to fight for this republic. We need to throw those stupid phones away and stop our tweeting and get learning how it is that our nation became and how we can save this nation, and get off of our couches in the evening at least once a month, come to a meeting, get committees of safety going, start dealing with the problems in our life and reality, get out of the world of fiction, and let's get into the land of reality. Let's take control of our government. Let's put them back under the chains of the Constitution. Bind them down under the chains of the Constitution, as Thomas Jefferson put it. But it only happens if we the people step up together and do it. United we stand, and divided we shall fall. And right now we are still divided. We need to build these committees of safety. So once again, anybody that can make it to this upcoming Saturday event, it would be good. But we will be putting this event throughout the state and to the states around us, and hopefully getting people across the nation to pick this up and do the same thing and work through their states to get their counties all organized. You know, the political process is controlled, the entire political process is controlled by four individuals on the national level. Well, let's start down on the bottom level. Every county has four individuals, sometimes five. They control everything that goes on in the county. Nothing political happens. Nobody gets onto the ballot without going through those five individuals. And those five individuals owe their allegiance to four or five individuals on the state level. And this is true in every state. And nothing gets through without their approval. no one gets onto the ballot without their approval. And that's why we have, you know, either the criminals on the right or the criminals on the left. Because these people have all sold their souls. And they're the deciders. Now, every once in a while, a good person gets in. That's true. Gets through that. But that's rare. But it has happened. Thank God it happened not long ago in the presidential election. And all those states, those four individuals in every one of those states, owe their allegiance to a group of four or five individuals on the federal level. That is true. The committees are a lot larger than that. For instance, here in New York State, they're supposed to have 62 chairmen, okay? But it's always governed by four individuals. The 62 chairmen of the counties come together, and they make up the state committee. But that's controlled by a chair and a co-chair, and of course they have the treasurer and the secretary, and they do what Congress does. They prevent anything from coming to the floor that they don't like. And again, they owe their allegiance all the way up to someone else. And on the federal level, of course, it's the foreign control. Enemies, foreign and domestic, have taken over our entire nation. A federal government is totally corrupt. We've lost our legislators. We've lost everything on the federal level. And this is true on the state level, too. It may be true that we do have some states where we have some good governors, okay, and we may have some good people, maybe majority in some of the states, some good people, but nevertheless, most of them are corrupt also on a state level. And if the people don't get up to do something about it, it ain't going to get fixed. That's the bottom line on that. So, let's get these committees of safety going. That's what we really are teaching here and encouraging people. It's the time is to act now. Everybody needs to act and get involved and do what they have to do in their counties. Okay, let's move on. So we have no more announcements. We have no questions that were coming in. I'm not going to take any questions or thoughts on the video we just played. We'll go into an open forum shortly. First, let's see, is Brent here? I don't see Brent right now. Is Brent in?
Yes, he's down on the common lawyer.
Okay, Brent, can you open your mic up?
It looks like he's traveling, so you might have to open his mic up.
Okay, can you open his mic?
Brent, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, we're going to pass that over to you in a minute, Brent. Give us a minute. Gerard, you want to take the controls, and I'll co-chair that with you?
Yeah.
Okay, so the controls will go to you after Brent takes the mic. Okay, this is Brent Allen Winters. He's going to talk to us about something, Constitution, common law. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
I usually listen to what all you folk have to say, and then it sparks something in my head that I want to talk about. And in this particular instance, I haven't heard any of you, so this will be fun. I just got through asking one of my friends, what do you think I ought to talk about tonight? So, I've got plenty to say, and there is plenty to talk about. Of course, we're in a pickle in America, have been for a long time. And I think I've said before that I haven't tried everything, but I've tried pretty near everything. I've tried politics. I got into it heavy, devoted my life to it, spent almost $1 million, not of my own money, but of other people's money. But there was still a lot of money. That's the way you do it in politics. You try to buy name recognition, and if you have name recognition, people will vote for you. And then we got into the courts, and I did a lot there, and I got beat up quite a bit, and tried to put a hurting on other people. The enemy, in the courts, of course, all according to the law, trying to defend people. And I've tried working in the church. I've done that, and off and on. Well, I've been doing that for years, and still doing it, of course. And I've tried hibernating. I did that for a while, for a few years. I spent in the mining business by myself out in the middle of nowhere in the wilderness. And I can give you a testimony if it carries any weight for what it's worth. And my testimony is that there's no political solution to the problem that we have in America. But that's nothing new. Truth is, there never was. Never has been a political solution. Why? Well, politics isn't the solution. Politics is the problem. Politics is not the solution. Politics is the problem. Now, we offer the solution. If we're thinking right, we offer the solution. What's the solution? Well, the solution is, as always, as a practical matter, the solution is doing what you ought to be doing. You, individually, doing what you ought to be doing. Well, what does that mean? I flesh that out a little bit, Brent. Well, that means that true law is the only remedy to lawlessness. That's what that means. True law is the only remedy to lawlessness. You cannot do what you ought to be doing unless you know what right and wrong is. And I know some of you are saying, well, I know in my heart what right and wrong is. And I say, no, you don't. You probably don't. You might some. But by and large, what is right in any given circumstance and situation is often about 180 degrees of what most people think it is. Now, I'm not joking when I say that. What is right in most circumstances is about 180 degrees of what most people think it is. And they sincerely try to do the right thing, and they sincerely damage their own selves, their own cause, their own families, their own country. Why? Because the only true lawgiver is not a moralist. Morality is not the answer to our problem. And the kingdom that God gives to men is not a kingdom of morality. Well, if it's not a kingdom of morality, then what is it? It's a kingdom of law. What is law? It's the will of the sovereign. He's the sovereign. Morality is a bad word. It's a dangerous word. It leads men into all sorts of confusion, astrays them into a labyrinth that they never get out of. Why? Well, because morality is a mush word. It doesn't mean anything. Matter of fact, the etymological definition of the word is just simply whatever the mores are at any given moment among a people. The mores. What are the mores? Well, that's an old Latin word that means custom. Whatever custom is in vogue this year may not be in vogue next year. There are a lot of things that we do here in America. We were talking about tattoos. Tattoos are no more the problem in America than long hair was a problem back when I was a teenager. You know, there were men that believed back when I was a teenager, and I heard them confess it later. They said they were wrong. They really believed that America's problems could be solved in a barber chair. If these boys that have grown their hair long and just get a haircut, everything would change. Well, no, that's not true, of course. The long hair was a symptom of the problem, but it wasn't the problem. Every boy in America could get a haircut. It's not going to change things. They're still the same guy they were before with the same stinking attitudes. That was the problem, was the attitude. Well, same thing is true with tattoos, for instance. People are upset about tattoos. I don't like them. I think it'd be a travesty for any person to be a participant in the resurrection in the final day and spend eternity with a resurrected body with some goofy or ugly or meaningless tattoo on their bodies. But people do that. So a place the other day said they'd remove your tattoos. Looked like they were doing a lot of business, too. That was refreshing to hear, frankly. Tattoos are not lawful. They're evil at bottom. Well, God said so. It's not a matter of morality, and it's not a matter of custom. That's what God said. Well, if God said it, that ends the matters. There's something else to talk about. Well, of course, people would argue with me about that, but fundamentally, there are some things that we just need to learn how to do. Talking to a friend this evening, and we were talking about, he tried to sell his house, and he worked a long time on selling a house, a piece of property he had. He was trying to move to another area, and for weeks they worked on it, made a lot of concessions. At the last minute, the people that were going to buy the house 2 days before closing pulled out and said they weren't going to buy it. And he said to me, it's fundamental, it's simple, but the truth is, it doesn't seem to me that people keeping their promises amounts much anymore. Well, I said, well, men are by nature promise breakers. That's what we are in our deplorable condition. The only difference in America has been in the past, this was my response, he was discouraged, is that we have the Bible and we have the Christian point of view. Fundamentally, we always have, whether you're Christian or not, you can't escape it. You live in a Christian country that was founded by Christian folk and Christianity, and the Bible has dominated our country from the beginning. Still does to a great degree. And fundamental to the Bible is that our God can't break his promises. It's the one thing he can't do. He says so. He said that he is the God who cannot, adunamis, he cannot lie. It's not even possible. Can he make a rock so big that he can't pick it up? Yeah, he can do that if he wants to. He can do a lot of things, but the one thing he can't do is lie. Well, when men become, and women, of course, become Christian folk, they have a new desire. They want to reflect their father's characteristics. And chief among his characteristics is he keeps his word. Contracts are important to him. And therefore, the idea of keeping your word and my word is a big deal in America. We have contract law in America. If the other party doesn't keep their word, you can take them to court. And if they've got any property, you can get the value of your contract out of it. We take it real serious. Always have. Well, in other countries in the world, other religious points of view, they don't take that serious at all because they don't have that influence of the maker of all things. They worship somebody else. I have friends that have gone to Islamic countries, for instance, on the north of Africa, and were involved in trying to, this has been a few years ago, start a cell phone company. They saw an opportunity there. Of course, that eventually has happened in all those places, all those otherwise obscure places. But a fella told me, he said, we'd draw up a contract, or we'd make promises, or we'd say we'd do this, you guys do that. Is that a deal? We got a deal? Yeah, we got a deal. And then they just walk away from it. Because in Islamic culture, where he was anyway, keeping your word isn't part of the understanding of anybody. As a matter of fact, they all know that you make promises just so you can break them. They all understand each other. Oh, by the way, drop a footnote about that. That's why we went to war with the Barbary pirates during the administration of Tom Jefferson. During the administration of Tom Jefferson, we went to war with the Barbary pirates who were holding hostage the entire Mediterranean Sea. Our shipping, our merchant ships, they wouldn't let them enter the Straits of Gibraltar, there between where Africa and Spain come together. They stood guard there, and the only way you could enter was pay a hefty, exorbitant protection money price. Then they'd let you in. And the trade in the Mediterranean, of course, was a lively, profitable trade. You had all the coast of Spain and, of course, Italy. Well, what do they have in Italy? Wine. Sicily. The Grecian country. They had wine, too. Then you had the Far East, the Holy Land, as they call it, and Asia Minor. That was all profitable, and there were things you could get there you couldn't get. Olive oil. You know, they were shipping olive oil out of those places just like they do today. And we wanted it. And it was an expensive item. So it was a profitable trade. The British were paying the protection money to these scummy devils. These scummy devils that were doing this, the pirate fleet, the Islamic pirates, they could have never done it themselves. They didn't have the culture that would back up the ability to do anything like that. No, they had a man from Scotland who said he converted to Islam. I forget the boy's name, but he was the admiral of the Islamic fleet. He probably had several wives and was living it up. And he probably had a lot of money. And yeah, he was the one that commanded the fleet, was making all the cash and making the demands for the protection money. Well, finally, the Americans said, we don't want to do this anymore. The Brits were paying it. We said, we don't want to pay it. So Tom Jefferson said, I'll send some boys over to negotiate with these Islamic folk. Now, Tom Jefferson was a man that had trouble learning about the reality of the depravity of man. He had an awful time. He had this idea of mankind, that mankind could govern himself. Now, listen to me close here and hear me out. And when you read documents like the Declaration of Independence, which he put together in his youth, I mean, he wasn't much over 30 years old. What did he really understand about life? Oh, he understood a lot about what he read, and he was fired up about it, but not until he became a very, very old man did the reality ever hit him between the eyes, like a 8-pound sledgehammer of what mankind is. He kept holding out in his mind all of his life the potential, the wonderful potential of mankind. Well, it finally came home to him, but it all started when he was president in this way. He made a deal with these Islamic pirates. Well, he found out, as did a whole lot of other Americans in his administrations, that they don't keep their deals, they don't keep their word. They even drew up a treaty that is oft-cited by a lot of left-wingers, a treaty with the Islamic pirates, and that treaty, it says in the very beginning, in the preamble, the prologue, that America is not a Christian nation. That's what it says. That was his attempt to get them to capitulate and agree to the treaty. And when he said that America is not a Christian nation, when he said, he approved it, of course, when his administration said that, they had to justify it somehow, because they knew that in the normal sense of words, that is an absurd statement. Now, there wasn't any other kind of religion in America but Christianity. But they said that hoping that it would appease the Islamicists, the Muslimmen, as they called them in that day, and that they would capitulate to the treaty. You see, the Muslimmen, as they call them, the Islamicists, they have a duty to kill Christian folk. That's what their leader, Muhammad, by example, has taught. And that is their law. Their law is whatever Muhammad did, not statutes and commandments and judgments as in the Bible. But whatever Muhammad did is their law. And they have writings in striking detail of everything he did, including his habits when he went to the outhouse, or the way he conducted foreplay with teenage girls. They have all that. And whatever he did, I say teenage girls, no, it was worse than that. They were a whole lot younger than that. Whatever he did was the law. That's one of the things I don't think folk in the West ever get. That's the big difference. They follow and worship a man, and he is without sin and without error. He speaks without error because he is without sin. You see, the commonness of the doctrine there, the old Babylonian doctrine of ex cathedra, it's in all false religions at some point, that the leaders are clothed, the office sanctifies the man, as Acton put it. Well, they have the same thing in Islam. Well, Jefferson finally figured out that wasn't true, that they weren't going to keep their word. And so he sent Stephen Decatur, a young naval officer over there, and Decatur, of course, snuck into the harbor. It wasn't as easy as the storybooks make it sound. They made several attempts, and they almost got themselves wiped out, but he finally got in. and they were going to burn the whole Islamic fleet. Well, the Islamicists heard somebody up on deck, and they came out of the hold, armed to the teeth, and it was a hand-to-hand struggle for quite a while, and men were being killed and on both sides. And one great big Muslim had Stephen Decatur down, had his one of those Islamic knives that were curved. He had it up in the air and was about to plunge it into his neck or his head or his wherever he could do it. Of course, Stephen Decatur was struggling like a madman. Now, this is an important, well-known story in some circles in American history. I wanted to throw it in. And another sailor came, saw what was going on, and left his struggle with dispatched one of the Islamicists and came over and killed instantly this big Islamic man who was about to kill Stephen Decatur. And this sailor's name was Reuben James. Reuben James, I believe he was from Connecticut, but I'm not dead sure, but he was from up there somewhere. And later on, the first ships that the Nazis, the first American ship that the Nazis sunk on the 31st of October in the year 1941, which would have been just a little over a month before Pearl Harbor, the name of the ship they sunk off the coast of Iceland was the Reuben James. And the sinking of the Reuben James was kept secret. I suppose the boys in Washington didn't want the war to start until they invited everybody. I don't know what it was, but they didn't want anybody to know that the Nazis had sunk the Reuben James. But that's the story, and that's why the ship that was sunk, that's why they called it the Reuben James. They named it after the man that saved the life of Stephen Decatur, that destroyed the Islamic fleet there in the north of Africa. Well, let me get back to my story, and I'll finish it up. And my whole theme here is it all comes down to you, personally. I tried everything else, and this is my conclusion, and this is my testimony for what it's worth. Don't look to National Liberty Alliance to do it for you. No, you got to get involved. Don't look for the president, D.J. Trump, or any other conservative figure to do it for you. No, you got to do something. What is it you got to do? Let me make it simple and put it clear. You got to do what the true lawgiver says to do. And you can't do what he says to do unless, number one, he gives you a new heart. And number two, a new heart desire, a new desire to do what he wants you to do. And number two, you got to know what it is, what he wants you to do. You got to learn it. You got to learn it. Do you have that desire? Do you want to do what he wants you to do? Are you committed to your Maker? Your Father in heaven, as Jesus Christ said? Well, if you are, if you are his son and his daughter, you will want to do what he wants you to do. You will want to please him. And you will want to learn true law. True law. Law is always the will of the true sovereign, whoever the true sovereign, whoever you take him to be. Well, Tom Jefferson, the problem is you need a new heart to do this. Tom Jefferson believed men were fundamentally good creatures. He was a humanist in that respect. Oh, he knew the Bible. He understood it. But he had faith in the potential of humanity. Our national motto even forbids that. Trust God. In God we trust, not in man. That's the foundation of America. We are not our own gods. We don't trust ourselves. If you do, you're unpatriotic. You're not a loyal American if you trust yourself. Don't listen to the tribe of people telling you to do that. It will destroy you. Because whatever you trust, when it goes down, you're going down. Whatever you trust, when it goes down, you're going down. Napoleon said, I wish I could say this in French. I wrote it once, but I don't know French. But Napoleon, that tyrant, said, I am France, and France is me. And all of France said, we are Napoleon, and Napoleon is France. Well, what happened? when Napoleon went down at Waterloo, who went down with him? France, because they worshipped him like a god. That's the way it always is. So whoever you pick to be your lawgiver, the one you worship, when he goes down, you'll go down. Unfortunately, our God has never lost a battle and never will. That's an important consideration. Back to Tom Jefferson, how did he finally come to grips with this reality that he had denied all of his life? Well, he was one of the biggest impetus, the founder of the University of Virginia. And it's a beautiful campus. I've been there. It's still there. Beautiful buildings. Some of them he designed themselves. I've seen them. Stood up on the porches of some of them. Happened to be in the place where it was, and I wanted to look around because there's a lot of history there. And Tom Jefferson believed that the cream of the crop of old Virginia, the young men would go to school there, and there's great potential there, and they can govern themselves. And they were the cream of the crop. They were the old blue bloods, you see, of the old country. George Washington was a blue blood. His grandpa fled to Virginia because he was on the wrong side of the war in England. He supported the divine right of kings. And they think they're a cut above other people. Those blue bloods are still there, by the way. They're not as prominent as they were 50 years ago, but they're still there. Robert E. Lee was one of those blue bloods. He thought he was a cut above. They thought they were some kind of nobility. And I'm not criticizing him specifically. I'm just making the point that's a fact of history. They believed that they were a class society. And Tom Jefferson never went anywhere that he didn't have a 14-year-old black boy open the doors for him and carrying his books. That was the world they lived in. That was Virginia. It was a different kind of place that way. And he thought that the young men of Virginia were a cut above, and he would have a university there for them. That was all very noble, and of course, he had a lot of good ideas. Well, after they got that school started, one night, about a dozen young men from that university, the cream of the crop, got arrested. They had gotten exceedingly drunk and went on a rampage and had beat up several elderly people and robbed them. Well, that shocked, of course, the community. This is the upper crust. What's going on here? These are the leaders at the University of Virginia, the young men, the hope of our country. They didn't know what to do. They had a stand down at the university. They called a meeting of all the students, the studentry. I say that because E.B. White hated the word student body. He said we ought to call them the studentry. But they called them all together in one place. I've been to the place where they have that meeting, Tom Jefferson was called in. He was an elderly man, so elderly at that point that he had to be helped up onto the platform. He walked with a cane. He sat down on the platform. Nobody knew what to say. Nobody knew what to do. It was a black eye on the university and everything that Tom Jefferson held dear and hoped for. They wanted somebody who had wisdom to say something. Of course, they looked to Tom Jefferson, one of the founders of the system of our common law government. They asked him to get up and address the studentry and all the people in town, the community that came. They helped him to the platform. He was older then. They had to kind of help him to the platform. He stood at the platform. He tried to speak, and he broke down and cried and sobbed. Couldn't say a word. Why? Because he finally came to the realization that a man has to have a new heart in order to obey his lawgiver. And there's only one place to get it, and that's from God himself. So, nothing will change. Politics won't change our country, won't rescue our country, won't snatch it from the jaws of destruction. Organizations, universities won't change it. There's only really at the end of it all, there's only one thing that'll change anything. And that one thing, T-H-I-N-G, is the maker of all things, the lawgiver, the true lawgiver, as James says. And he has given law to us again. I know you've heard me say this. He has given law to us in two volumes. Just two. That's all we need to know. I'm in good company when I say this. William Blackstone said this. John Fortescue in the 14th century said this. The law, John Wycliffe in the 14th century said this. The laws of nature is the first volume, unwritten in the nature of creation, observable by men, the laws that we observe. We call it today, one of the words we use for it is our common law. And the second volume is the laws of nature's God. The laws of nature's God. That's the Bible, says William Blackstone in his commentaries on the laws of England. And everybody knew that. The laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The law unwritten and observable. The law written and final. Those are the two volumes that you must know. I'm going to throw a challenge out. I think I've said it before and then I'll quit. If you don't do anything else in this life, read something, some small thing out of the Bible without fail every day. That's the book that has distinguished Americans from all other countries. And if you don't know it, you're missing out on a whole lot. It's a powerful book. Very powerful book. It'll change your life if you just read it. Don't worry about some fancy study method. Just read it. God will give you what he wants you to have if you'll read. And be disciplined about it. You cannot do what you do not know. You cannot obey what you do not know. This is Brent Allen Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. And thank you, John, for allowing me to say a few words. My comments are my own. No one here takes responsibility for what Brent says, and Brent doesn't want them to. But we do want to say one more thing. Join us for the sheriff's class that is on Thursday mornings. You can go to commonlawyer.com and learn how to see there, how to participate. And after the sheriff's class, we have ambitions. Next, a teacher class, 12 weeks on the grand jury. And I want Sheriff Dar Leaf, who's joined me to make these presentations in the sheriff's class, to join me for the grand jury class. I hope he does. Well, this is Brent. Thank you, John. And Gerard, I think you've got the mic.
I do. Thank you.
Hey, Gerard, before you get started, I'd like to add some stuff here. And I might want to play an 8-minute clip. I think it's pretty powerful. I was thinking of doing it next week, but I'd like to do it tonight because I think it works into the theme that we started off with, focusing in on the Star Spangled Banner. But before we do that, thanks a lot, Brent. Before we do that, I just want to make a note here. The past week or so, I opened up a Rumble account. It's a video on rumble.com, and I uploaded about 43 videos. I did send out an email on that and gave the link. I got the link up on the board right now. Actually, they got these numbers up here, but all you have to do is go to rumble.com/National Liberty Alliance, unless you want to remember those numbers, and save that into your favorite place. I'd appreciate if people would go out there and watch some of these videos and subscribe. Like I said, we got 43 videos up there right now. We got many, many, many more to come. And most of which will be educational videos. I think just about every one of them are educational videos. Some are pretty patriotic, but of course the patriotic ones are educational also. So please subscribe and share our website, rumble.com/NationalLibertyAlliance.org. You'll also find that video that we played tonight, the Star Spangled Banner. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, we do have two people into the queues. Hit a star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. And Gerard, I want to just play this 8-minute clip, and then when that's done, you could take the mic from there, and I'll be in the background. Okay, so this is the one I had mentioned. Great patriots paid the price for this nation. They gave their lives. They gave everything. and our founding fathers. Of course, they are our founding fathers too, but our founding fathers here paid an incredible price. And so this is the rest
but
of the story.
For any eve of the 4th of July, I, Paul Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember.
All right, I'm at the wrong button.
You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. It's in the last paragraph where you will recall when I remind you, it says, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated, 24 were lawyers and jurists, 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland, no more rule by redcoats, below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy, and we were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry, there was no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardship. Jefferson finished the draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence, the names were kept secret for 6 months, for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd face a hangman's rope. But they signed the pledge. And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ship swept from the seas. To pay his debt, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer and Hall and Gwinnett and Walton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward, Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. and he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others, one of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war, and he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar, if the public good requires it." So he, too, lived up to the pledge. Of the 56, few were long to survive. 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardship or from its more merciful bullet. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia. But I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men, certainly not. Terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, this is as much as I shall say of it. They had learned that liberty is so much more important than security. That they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
We hold these truths to be so vivid that all men are created equal. That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Well, let's take back our republic by getting committees of safety in your county. Gerard, you got the mic. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? *6 and a 1.
Okay. Very good.
Do you want the desktop or anything? I'm going to pass that over or just leave it here the way it is.
Nah, you could leave it. Leave it up there. I don't know that I'm going to do anything on the desktop.
Okay.
Hopefully we get a couple of more questionnaires, because otherwise we're going to have an early night here. Okay, and there's only 2 in the queue, so anybody has anything to say or a question, get in. So, Tiana from Washington, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
I can.
Okay. I've recently, me and a couple other people have started a committee of safety, and they decided that I'm going to be the chairperson, I guess. I didn't intend on that, but, I mean, somebody's got to do it, okay? And so I'm going to do my best at this. But
that's what happens. Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I need to know, like, what for an agenda for, like, for our first meetings and stuff. Like, and who do we contact first, the sheriff or and which exact, like, specifically which parts of my local government do I go and talk to?
How many people do you have in your committee so far?
We don't have very many. Like, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, just 4 of us right now. I mean, we've got a couple other people, but, I mean, for the core group, it's just a few of us. Like, just starting, literally.
Okay. Well, let me suggest you have to follow the program we laid out because it takes a little time to develop. You want to get about 15 people together minimum,
to
create your resolutions and to create your charter. So you want to create a charter and resolutions. We have a step-by-step plan, in the Committee of Safety Handbook. And you can find the Committee of Safety Handbook.
I have it right in front of me. I have it printed out in front of me right now. I haven't read through the entire thing yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
there's two books that you want to look at then. The main one that gets started is the Committee of Safety Handbook. But the other one,
and then there's
is
a county
the,
one.
And the other one is the Committee of Safety Committeeman Handbook. Okay, that gets into more detail. But first, work with the first book, get through that, and then you can read the second. It's good to read through them before you even start exercising them. And we've got in there, you'll find links to various pages where there's lots of material. Every time you have a meeting, you know, I've created quite a few different video PowerPoints, and of course, there's also PowerPoints up there. People could do them live if they want. But I've created quite a few of them, and I tried to keep them all down around a half hour, 40 minutes at the most, but a half hour, even less than that if possible. And every one of these is a teaching video, you know. And I laid out and listed particular videos that you want to get going in the beginning so it helps to train the people, helps to give them the right frame of mind and the focus. But I just recently, yesterday I believe it was, let's see if I can find this. I guess I lost the page here. Let me see if I can get back to Rumble and I'll show you. Well, actually, no. You can go right to our page. This is a new page I just put up. It's an educational page under education, and it is educational videos. Okay? And I believe the first one that's up here, the first one up here is an introduction to the Committee of Safety. This will give you, this is about a 30-minute video, and it's a PowerPoint video, and it'll give you a really good idea and beginning structure of what you need to be doing in order to create your committees of safety. I'm going to leave this particular video on the top all the time. I mean, we'll be adding lots of new videos as we go along, instructional videos. But every time you come together, you want to learn something. People need to realize that if you have your meetings once a month, then it's going to take 3 months before you get to the point where you'll be able to be ready to go talk with the sheriff. If you get enough people together and you want to expedite that, maybe you could do 2 a month or something. But generally speaking, the commitment of the people is at least a meeting once a month, which would probably be about 2 hours, roughly speaking, and maybe a couple of hours of work throughout the month that they'll have to exercise and do, depending on what committee they're on, because each committee has a job and a focus, and they must report. And the committee chairman of the subcommittees will come and make the report of their accomplishments throughout that month. You know, just like any other committee and process that you put together, it's set up in such a way you want to get production going, you want to get contact with local government, you want to put them back under the chains of the Constitution, you want to let them know that you're there. So all of this, you know, the two booklets particularly and this particular video will be very helpful, and a whole bunch of other educational videos that you're going to want to show and then discuss at your meetings. You'll be discussing problems. You'll be discussing new committees. You know, there'll be a lot of activity and a lot of things going. And remember, you know, many hands make light work. And the ideal is to get to be about 200 strong. If you're 200 strong, we are stronger than the workforce that they have. in the political process to take, and that means we would take over the political process totally and do away, hopefully, one day with the parties, as Washington spoke of would be the destruction of this country, and he was right. And so we got to get rid of the political parties. As a matter of fact, once you get the true committee man going, because that's what the Committee of Safety is, the true committee man, and get rid of the statutory committee man, I think a lot of that will fall apart once the statutory committee men hear about the true committee men. They'll start coming over and moving into that process. A lot of people who are disgusted with what's going on in these political parties, and they'll become part of the solution instead of staying with part of the problem. You know, but there's lots of different groups in your community throughout your county that you can go talk to and do a presentation.
That's what I need to know.
Of safety, bring people together, and so on.
John, may I have a word, please?
Sure, go right ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Tiana. This is Francine. I also live in Washington State, and I see by your area code, are you in King County, or where exactly are you?
I am. King County.
Will you be around tomorrow? I can give you a call?
Yes.
Okay, I'll call you tomorrow, and I will give you some more information that's pertinent to King County, okay?
Great. All right. Thank you.
You're
I appreciate
very welcome.
That.
Okay. Thank you, John.
And then,
back to you, Gerard. Go ahead.
I also had an issue with the meetup group that I started. They deleted it.
Who deleted
it? And I sent the meetup, and I sent the message, I sent the email that I got from them to Jan, I forwarded it to Jan, and I gave it to Ron, too. Ron, the person that sent me the welcome email for being the community safety, the welcome email, the person that was at the bottom of that email, I sent them also. And he said that he was going to say something to you about it because they deleted it. And it was said that I violated the guidelines or something about, it was ridiculous, actually. And
what guidelines did they claim that you violated?
Here, I can read it to you.
Yeah, as long as it's not too long, yeah.
No, it's not too long. Let me just get it to it here. Find it. Sorry, it's going to take me a second. I got to turn on my computer.
It's going to be the same guidelines that YouTube uses and everybody else, John.
But it's like a lie. Like, they're not even being honest.
That's what they do when they want to cancel you. That's what they do.
Yeah. Sorry. I should have had my computer on, I suppose, but okay.
This is the beginning of the fight right there, fighting with Meetup.
Yeah, by the way, coming in on your computer is far better than any other way you can come in because you have your laptop, you know, you have your desktop and you can see everything we're laying out. What are you coming in on a smartphone?
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be a lot better if you come in on your browser from your computer.
Okay. Yes, I will. I can join even right now with that, can't I? Gmail.
Well, if you need a couple of minutes, we could talk to someone else and then come back to you after that. Would you want to?
Okay, I got my Gmail opened up, but yeah, if you would like to.
Well, if you got it open, go right ahead then.
Yes, I do. I got it open now. Okay, so. Oh, come on, B. Support. Okay, meet me right here. It says, to provide some context, your group was reported to us by other Meetup members on the platform. We reviewed your Meetup group and determined it did not align with our policy and community. As outlined in our groups and event policies, Meetup groups that contain hateful content, promote supremacy, or associate with known hate groups, militia gatherings, or groups that are known for engaging in violent acts are not permitted on Meetup. With this in mind, your group has been taken off Meetup. Meetup reserves the right to remove members, Meetup groups, or content from the platform at our discretion. Says your group will not be reinstated. We appreciate your understanding.
Oh, they appreciate it. It does sound like YouTube, Gerard. Hey, let me ask you, is there a name on the bottom of that signed by someone? Is there an address, email, fax, or phone?
Ivan Oblonsky, Trust and Safety Specialist.
Okay. And is there any kind of an address?
It's a support at meetup. Let's see. It's support at meetup.
All right, forward that email to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll see if we can make contact with them. Depending, we may come from the perspective of the grand jury on this one. And
say that one more time. Can you say that email address again?
Yeah, mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org.
Okay, okay.
And we'll, I think we'll try to follow that up and respond to them and demand them to allow this, because that's ridiculous. We'll address every issue. Was there anything up there on your on the meetup that might, or anybody get up there and bring some issues up that might be not right?
Nothing had even began. It had been 23 hours. It hadn't even been 24 hours.
Hey,
what
I want you to do is write exactly, step by step, every fact you can think of from the point of, but not going too long, but staying on point, that basically you opened up the meetup, this is what the contents was, the basic information that was put up there, this is whatever you were thinking, you know, when you put it together, and do it in an affidavit form. Send that also, you know, attach it to an email and send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. I'm going to read through it, and I might help to adjust it, but make sure that the facts are correct when I make the, you know, cleanup, sort of put it into a affidavit form. And if you would sign that as an affidavit, and it'll be addressed to the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and then we will go and talk with these people directly as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury and want to know what's going on. So I have to think about how and what we'll write in that and how we'll address it. That's what we'll need from you, okay, an affidavit. You know, write that paper, and you can actually just type it, your information, into the email. We'll put it in an affidavit form and then mail it back to you for signature, and then we will, like I said, go after these people. But also send us, forward that entire email.
I just did.
They specifically mentioned militia, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And you know, the funny thing is, the next day I got welcomed by I joined a few groups when I started it up, when I created it, and one was emergency preparedness, and you know, and there was one that was militia, and they welcomed me the next day. I think it was the Snohomish County or something militia. That word was in the title of their group.
Okay, so, and they said anything that has to do with militias, right?
Yep, literally.
Well, that's a discrimination against the Constitution of the United States right there. They just committed treason. We won't let anybody, what militia? Well, this was a militia nation. We have the militia clauses of the Constitution. So what they're saying is you're not allowed to exercise your right of a militia on meetup. That's un-American.
I just said, I don't understand how you can lie to me and say you don't allow certain types of people on your platform. You say you don't allow groups associated with militia, yet I joined a militia group on Meetup that same day I created it. And it says, I'm pretty confused at this contradicting fact. So again, can you tell me how I was in violation of the guidelines, but it's okay for you to lie to me? That was my response. I don't know if that was...
Go see if that militia group is still up.
Yeah.
they might have missed it.
I don't know. I don't get it. It is very frustrating. Okay, so you needed me to write something, and what points did you need me to put in that?
Yeah, well, basically the facts. I mean, you started a group, okay, for a certain purpose. You write down what was in your mind, what the purpose was, write whatever. If you put any content up there at all, write down, you know, give us the information. This is the content I put up. I put this, that, or the other thing. Or I said other thing. And
it came out of the committee safety handbook, actually, what I put up there.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
You write that, and you put and we got a copy of that, so you know how to send us that. And basically, you know, what happened, you know, that they just took you down. This is the reason, you know, we'll have the email, so we'll be able to help out a little bit with that, get some of those facts into there, but you can put the facts in there. We will write up in a affidavit form send it back to you. You'll want to make sure that it's exactly accurate, that there's, you know, we haven't changed any of your thoughts or points in there. And then once we're sure we got it right, then we'll create the final document. We'll email it to you, and you'll get it notarized, signed and notarized. And then you can scan it and email it back to us or fax it to us. And then we will approach them from the perspective of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. We're going to do a notice and demand, and we'll see where we can go with this. Because this could become a problem, this whole thing. We got, of course, one up with Dutchess County here in New York. Matter of fact, let me open mine up and see if they closed us down, but I was up there today.
I tried finding any other committees of safety, and I couldn't find any.
How about if you put the word militia in? Look for other militias.
In
the meetups.
I did try that, and nothing came up.
Nothing. Okay. All right. Well, if that's the only document that up there, that's fine, because that's a pretty powerful document that we're going to address and send a copy and attach that as the evidence, and we'll see. We may take this right into the federal court. But, you know, sometimes it's not wise to do anything too early. You know, we're going to take our time, and I think by the time we settle up a conversation, if they'll converse with us, hopefully in the next couple of months, you know, we'll be on the other side, I hope. We don't know how long it's going to be before that happens, but it does look like things are going to become pretty hardcore after the holidays. I truly believe that. Anybody that's not prepared with at least a couple of months, I mean, or 6 months if possible, food and provide for yourself, realizing that there's a lot of stuff you're not going to be able to get. You know, you're not going to be able to get toilet paper. You're not going to be able to get a lot of things. So you need the basics.
You had to say toilet paper, didn't you?
Yep, I had to.
And start the hoarding.
and then actually they did, and I thought about it some more, and I started another ticket in the meetup, and I titled it Discrimination, and I can't see my message though in what I wrote to them. I can't remember exactly what I said, but
well, whatever you got, whatever you can remember, you can even say I think I said or whatever. You know, whatever you feel is truthful, okay?
They haven't responded, so
going back to this food thing, though, if you can't afford much, and even if you can't afford much food, you should get a lot of rice and a lot of beans, because that's kind of if you can't really get a lot of food together, at least you can live off rice and beans. You know, so.
Okay, so we'll be in contact with you.
When you send the email, make sure you give me your name in the email and your phone number, and obviously I'll have your email, and I might make phone contact with you at some point.
Yeah, my phone number is at the bottom of my, it's in the signature of my email. It'll be in the signature of my email.
Okay, what's your name, Tina?
Tiana.
Okay, Tiana,
yep.
Appreciate the call. If you got anything else, bring it up. Gerard, you got the mic, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. I mean, National Liberty Alliance is on a couple of real socialist liberal websites, you know, where they say we're no good, we're this, we're that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're still up on that Southern Poverty Law thing. But
But National Liberty Alliance, although that name is in the book, the meetup, correct me if I'm wrong, we suggested that you start your meetup, for instance, ours is New York Dutchess County Committee of Safety. Others should be their state, their county, Committee of Safety. So how would they connect it with
National Liberty Alliance unless you got your signature on that handbook?
Yeah, only in the handbook would they find National Liberty Alliance referred to.
Right.
But that's okay. It's a good, powerful lawful handbook. So.
Right.
Okay, anything else, Tiana?
No, that's it.
Okay.
For now, I mean, I can't think of anything else right this second. So that gave me a lot to think about. So.
Thank you. All right.
I'm going to
go to the next one. Anybody with me want to get in the queue, now's the time. Okay, Cody, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening.
Yeah, one other thing. *6 and 1 to get into the queue. *6 and 1. There's only one other person in the queue. *6 and 1.
Or if you're using the app, there's actually a button on the bottom left on the smartphone app. But you guys were talking about Republican forms of government and how so many of these totalitarian governments claim that they're Republican forms of government. Well, Michael Gaddy, he's a historian that's got a show on Revolution Radio at 5 p.m. Eastern Sundays, Studio A. And he's, I forget the name of the book, but he sent me the seven principles necessary to constitute a Republican form of government. And number one is, you know, strict separation of powers, both horizontally and vertically. And then government is run by officers for a term and only during good behavior. You know, so we're having some of this good behavior issue that we're not able to regulate like we need to. Offices are selected by election and not by appointment. And I know we've talked about the sheriffs, you know, some of these states not wanting the sheriffs elected. Didn't you guys say New York or something? They try to appoint them now or something?
Well, some of the counties in New York, yes. Like down in the city, they have appointed, they're not, whatever they call them. I don't know what they call them, but yeah. We have, you know, there's 67 counties in New York, and there's probably, I don't know what it is, four or five
seven.
Of them.
Seven
of them now, wow. Yeah. That don't have shares.
You guys ever run across that really good website by David Shistokas? He's a lawyer out of Chicago, and he's actually going to run for, I guess, attorney general as a Republican. And I met him at the Illinois Conservative Union meeting, and we were talking about some different ideas. And he said, "Well, the problem with, you know, if they allow the people to vote on too many referendums, or, you know, I was thinking the idea that anytime, you know, the state spends money, you know, it would have to be, you know, approved by the people." And he said, "Well, they'll get thrown out because they'll say it's not a Republican form of government." Well, couldn't you also go to court and argue that the way they're doing with these sheriffs now is violating the, you know, the Republican form of government? You know, that would be something to consider if these states are trying to take the power away from the people and, you know, appoint these sheriffs, because that's not...
It's unconstitutional for them to get rid of the office of the sheriff.
Well, it's not a Republican form of government. If you go by the old... I forget who wrote this book.
Yeah, but what you need to understand, though, Cody, is this, okay? We're not just a republic. We are the only natural law republic. We have a covenant with God. It's called the Declaration of Independence. And there are certain principles laid out in that Declaration of Independence, and they're reiterated. Some of those principles, or a lot of those, there's eight particular principles that is focused in on the Declaration of Independence that Jefferson focused in on, and a good deal of them is also reiterated in the preamble of the United States Constitution. And the key thing is this: is that let me just read it. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator. These are the principles he's speaking right here, with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And that starts with the Constitution, and it continues on with the Committees of Safety. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing this power in such form as they shall see most likely to affect the safety and happiness. Okay, but if you go to the beginning, okay, of this, this is the key, this is the law. This is what our Constitution is built upon. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth and separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to this separation. Okay, so the key thing is this. We are built upon the law, okay, the law of God. Now, the Declaration of Independence, when you put it together, it is a covenant with God. We're seeking to live under His law and to receive His blessings in return for that. And that's why when you go into the Constitution and you read the Constitution, it talks about the government's one of the main requirements of government is to secure the blessings of liberty. You see, liberty is a blessing. Man cannot achieve true liberty without God. It can only come from God. It's a blessing from God. We can't achieve it. We can't climb up to that pinnacle any other way. And so that's the key difference between our government or our republic than any other republic. And the key thing, again, gets back to the preamble. We the people ordained and established this constitution for them. So we the people are always above them, and they could make no law to govern our behavior.
Are we really, John, when I sit with, you know, this attorney is well versed on the Constitution, has written books about it, and I said, well, you know, I think we need a law in Illinois that any taxes, fees, anything they want to impose needs to go to referendum and see if the people allow it. Because, you know, the property taxes are the second highest in the nation. It's totally absurd. And
yeah, but the Constitution already deals with that. It lays out the lawful tax and the unlawful tax. It's very specific. There can be no direct tax. You can't tax a man's property. You can't tax a man's labor. The Constitution forbids it. That's all. Again, we're living in the land of fiction. As long as people believe that they can and believe that that's the law, then we're under the law of fiction. And that's why we have to wake the people up. Now, we don't have to wake everyone up. We just have to wake up the majority that participate and become more than. And I'm telling you, this entire nation is controlled by four individuals in every single county, and they have slaves working for them, approximately 150 to 200, 250 people that are working underneath those party bosses, going out and doing all the paperwork. You know, once those people disappear and realize and move to the other side, there's no one to carry the paperwork for the parties. They'll fall apart because they have to have these designated petitions to get these people on the ballots. That's what we need to do. We need to get the people on the ballots.
Hey, Ross, I got a little information for you as far as referendums go. Because I was on town government, and people said, well, you should put that to referendum. What are you guys doing making laws without us and stuff? And the answer is because we have a representative government, and you vote those people in, and they have the right to do that. However, in Pennsylvania, they're a commonwealth, and I don't know what the big difference is, but I know one of the big differences is when they do a budget, they put everything to referendum, and it takes forever. And you can go there, and you could protest. They have these meetings, and sometimes there's only three people there. Sometimes, if it's a hot button issue, there's 100 people, and they put everything to referendum because that's the way their state constitution was written. So
I think taxing should be. I think any time the state government wants to.
What we can legally put to referendum over here in New York is anything that puts a tax that's a special use. Like if we're doing something with a sewer district or something like that, we can't vote on taxing the people for a sewer district. That has to have a special election. They have to approve it. It's a special district. So anything like that, they got to have you voting on. But the rest of it,
on the state level, they don't. If they want to raise the income tax, they probably just do it. Now,
Illinois, the income tax is unlawful. It's unconstitutional. And the Constitution is the law of the land. And anything to the contrary is null and void, including other state constitutions.
Until they come and take your stuff, because, you know, that's the
problem. Well, of course. Look at, because people believe in the fiction. We have so lost. We have lost our. We have no education. This is why, look at it. What we got up here at National Liberty Alliance is new to many, many people.
Oh,
very few people are aware of the things we speak about and
absolutely
what we talk about and what we teach. But let me just tell you something about referendums. Out in Connecticut, that's how they got rid of the sheriffs. There's eight counties out there, and they did a referendum across the state, and they decided to get rid of the sheriff. Well, guess what? The sheriff is inside the state constitution. And it lays out in the Connecticut state constitution,
well,
New York state constitution.
According to Brent, like you could
exactly
argue,
you can
still argue that and say that it's time immemorial. Yeah.
Exactly, even though it's not in the constitution, if it's not in the state constitution, it still is the principle of common law. It is the
the law unwritten. Do you really think people voted for that? That had to be a sham election. Who would want to get rid of their sheriffs?
Yeah, there was something wrong there. I don't know what took place.
We're going to sue
out there for sheriffs for Connecticut soon, but we just can't do it right now. It's just not worth it because we just waste our time in the court. But we are preparing for that. They need to get their sheriffs back, and the 7 counties of New York that lost their sheriffs need to get their sheriffs back, and we need to bring it back under the common law. But that is key, what you just said. The key and the bottom line is that the sheriff and the common law go hand in hand. You know, the sheriff is the keeper of the common law. He is the protector of the people. He's the protector of the king, the sovereign. And since we, the people, are the sovereign, we are the kings of our own domains. Okay, we are the lawmakers. We're the final law deciders, whether it's an indictment on an individual or a decision in a court of law. It is the people that make that decision. So with that said, that sheriff is there to protect the sovereign. And that's his job.
Well, I want to say that this is the result. This is the result of all your newscasts and everything going in our democracy, because this idea that if you get enough people to vote for it, they fly. That's a democracy where you have
a Republican form of democracy. But you know, isn't it interesting that Connecticut is? You know, there's all this shadow over Sandy Hook and.
Yeah, and I think they call themselves the constitutional state, don't they? Is that Connecticut?
The Constitution.
Yeah, it's on their driver's license plates, the constitutional state.
Who's
isn't it Connecticut?
Who's Constitution and who's God? You know, that's what you need to ask, you know, that's the case.
Well, look, that's why, again, 4 people control every county. And again, they owe their allegiance up the line. But the bottom line is those 4 people need a small workforce of between 150 to 250 people, depending on how big the county is, how what the population is. So they need about 200 people in order to collect the signatures required to get these people, these criminals, onto the ballot. You remove their workforce, they're done. They can't get anyone.
We've still got a big problem with our federal Congress. I think we need a constitutional amendment to literally close Congress in D.C. We don't get properly represented by 535 corrupt people in D.C. That's so.
We just need to exercise the Constitution. Look, in order to take back the federal government, we have to first take back our local government. That's where it starts. Everything goes back to the grassroots. And then we work together, county to county, state to state, to deal with our federal government. Because remember, as a committee of safety, you'll come together in assembly districts. And an assembly district might run into different counties. I know it does here in New York because they gerrymandered so many things. But let's take a congressional district. I forget how many congressmen we had. And last, I think I remember, it was like 38 or 40 or something like that. We have 62 counties. But we have to deal with other counties coming together for instance, an assembly district or a congressional district or for a U.S. Congress. And so they come together, county to people in certain parts of the county with other people in certain parts of the county in order to decide who gets onto the ballot and then walk the petitions collectively to get these people onto the ballot. You see, that becomes the job of the true committee man, which is the Committee of Safety. And that's all of our during election time, we have to become more active by going out and maybe spend 2 or 3 days on a Saturday morning or a Saturday afternoon, just a couple hours for a couple of days, where we collect enough signatures. I think if we collect, if we have a workforce of approximately 200 people, generally speaking, then the necessary signatures that may need to be gathered is maybe 20 or 25 per person, which doesn't take long to get.
Let me ask you this: on the state level, do you think that you could sell the idea to the state legislators that, hey, let's bring the power of the federal government back to the states and let you guys vote on the federal laws? I mean, because with technology, you don't need these people.
Well, no. You have to get rid of the 17th Amendment, and that corrects that problem and brings back the state legislators. Then they now become sovereign again, because right now they're not sovereign. They have no say in what goes on in Congress because they lost the Senate seat.
Close it down. We literally have a new.
No, just exercise the law.
No, I don't want them in D.C. They just go there and they be buddy buddy and they forget about us. So
No. Look, if the people take control, then you recall them when they break their oath.
But you can only do that on the senator level, and then they can still go there and vote on.
No. No, we do it on a congressional level. We can't necessarily. Well, we can remove people from the Senate too, but
that's the fact. So they can still go pass a horrendous bill, and then you can recall them, and that bill still, you know, still flies. The states don't have veto power over their senators that are sitting in D.C., even if they repeal the...
Yeah, but remember, if you do what Thomas Jefferson said, and you bind these people back under the chains of the Constitution, require them to be obedient to the Constitution, we start working on the grassroots level to get rid of the parties, the two major parties, all parties, actually. There should be no parties. So you don't have that collective work in Congress, you know, the Republicans against the Democrats, because that's the game. That's how they stole our whole government, is by setting one up against the other, two major parties. And George Washington spoke about this. Other founding fathers spoke about this. This was the destruction of America's political process. But if the people take control on the grassroots level, and if your congressman is not obeying the Constitution, is not keeping his oath, then you come together in that congressional committee, comes together with whatever county share in that congressional area, you come together and you make the decision, let's take this guy out of office, and you recall him and run a special election. That's the power and the authority.
But you're talking on the state level to do a special election, right?
No, any level, federal level, you can recall anybody at any level. Okay, you get rid of your congressman, which is representing your area. Remember this, what's it, 440?
Well, not all states allow recall elections, do they? I mean,
No. That's we're not under statutes. Again, there's fiction of law again.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a statute to tell me what I got to do to have liberty, to tell me how we can have government by consent of the people. We don't live by statutes. We never gave them an authority to write a statute to control our behavior or our authority.
Isn't
we
that
take full authority.
That they would tell the people that they don't have a right to have a recall election? Even
what's insane is that what's insane, unfortunately, is that the people believe it. Okay? That's insane, because we are living in fiction. It's time to step up, get educated, take authority on the grassroots level, and we will take it up to the state, and the states will take it up to the federal level. And remember, there are 430 or something congressmen. So there are 430. How much?
535.
Is that that's what you put the Senate in.
435 House and 100.
Yeah. So let's take the congressional districts. The congressional districts, there are 435 congressional districts throughout the United States. And you have a congressman that represents you in your congressional district. And you get together in that congressional district with the committeemen that are the Committee of Safety and say, we have a problem with our a congressman. He's not obeying the law. Let's recall him. You have a debate, discussion, and you set forth
the
evidence.
Then
and then they say, yes.
The judge won't let you have an election.
They forget about that.
The law, you know?
But again, there is no law to that.
To have the election. You need
if we're under civil law, you're right. You are absolutely right if we continue under the law of fiction. But when we get to the other side, that's why we the people have to move quickly. We get to the other side, we need to take it back to the law of the land and bring us back under law, common law. And then there is no statute for a judge to even make a ruling on, to make any decision on that. They either have to stand up for the Constitution, you take it into the federal court, and it is their duty to uphold the Constitution, and they will apply it. And if they don't, then you take them into a court of law, and you sue that court, because it's a court of record that you would open, and you pull the people in to turn that decision another direction. You see, there's other ways to go, but people don't know what to do. They don't know how to do these things, and they're living in the land of fiction. They're living in the land of Oz. We have to change it. You change it by changing people's minds. When enough people say no, when enough people understand the law and say, no, that's not the law, then there's nothing they can do. And when you take the power and authority and you start exercising it, there's nothing they can do. When the people take control of their local political powers and start exercising their powers, there's nothing anywhere anyone could do to that people. But that's what it requires.
I won't take more of your time. Thanks, John. Appreciate
okay.
That description
or discussion. Thanks,
Cody. Okay, we got Ross next. Go ahead, Ross. Hey.
Yeah, our middle class is disappearing. How could we restore the middle class?
How can we restore who? The middle class?
The middle class, yes.
Well, I don't know specifically that you're going to restore the middle class. The middle class will get restored when the law is followed. You see, what they're doing is they're taxing us, you know, unconstitutionally, and they're doing away with the middle class because now you're going to have the rich and the poor. So when we fix everything else, the middle class will come back. There's not just one thing we can do. It's the whole system has to be constitutional, and then we'll have a middle class.
Okay, because the Constitution is the thing that establishes the middle class.
What do you mean? It's supposed to be through for everybody. But the thing is they have unlawful taxes that are driving the middle class away. In other words, it's making us poor
The Constitution provides for Congress to write laws to control interstate commercial activities, and states control interstate commercial activities. They're to write laws for that. They're supposed to be just and righteous laws, and it's controlling it for the sole purpose, really, of getting it out and making sure everybody has that freedom of commerce, okay? Then it's up to the people to be entrepreneurs, and believe me, people will pick it up and become entrepreneurs and businessmen will arise, and the middle class will return all on its own once you free it up and go back to gold and silver. That's the two key things. So, yeah, what Gerard is saying, once we just reinforce the law, that's all we got to do. It's up to the people from there because that gives them the opportunity.
Yeah,
that's the whole idea, get everybody dependent on government.
Yeah.
That's how they got rid of the middle class. Go ahead.
Yes. Do you hold a book called written by Victor Davis Hanson called The Dying Citizen?
I don't recall that.
No, me either, but tell us a little.
One of his chapters of his book is talking about how we didn't listen to the classical warning of the middle class, is how the rich and the poor hate the middle class.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't get
that. Say that again.
Yeah.
You were roboting. Your bandwidth went down. Repeat yourself.
Let's say one of the chapters of his books talks about the disciplined middle class, and he was saying we didn't listen to the warning of the Greeks and the Roman classical works about if you don't protect your middle class, you will eventually lose it.
You said it was the Romans and the Greeks? I don't understand.
Yes.
And if
the word the middle class is a Greek word, actually.
Well, we do know that Rome, when in its day, particularly, that they had a lot of commercial activity going. So maybe in many ways they can be an example to us. You know, unfortunately, people think that the United States was built after Rome, and nothing could be further from the truth. As a matter of fact, Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, they both put up the ideas of what should be the U.S. seal. And one of them chose Moses holding up the rod as the sea is being spread. And that was one of the things. I think that was Jefferson's picture. And the other one brought up a potential seal was to give the a picture of the pillar of fire separating the Egyptians from Israel as they were being ready to cross the Red Sea. So God was protecting them with a pillar of fire. And now what ended up to be the seal? It ended up to be exactly what you're saying. The eagle, which represents the Roman idea, and the pyramid, which brings us to Egypt, and both of those are represented in the Bible as being, the eagle is an unclean bird to begin with, And of course, Egypt was what put the Israelites into bondage that they were being freed from. So already we were being corrupted. Our whole system was being corrupted before we even became a nation. And when we became a nation, they were already infiltrated us. And Rome and the Pope and the King collaborated in 1818 and sent forth letters of marque to plunder America's political and judicial systems and to destroy us. And that really was already taking place all the way back in 1750 to destroy common law in the colonies, with the original Bar Association was created in the colonies by the British, by the King, in 1750. And that was in response, I think, a lot to do with Benjamin Franklin, because he had his newspaper going by then, and he had a lot to say, and he was complaining about some of the things that Britain was doing, what the King was doing. And already the assault upon the colonists by the British was pretty rough back then already. But they couldn't get convictions, and of course they eventually took them overseas to try them because they couldn't get convictions in the colonies against the people. So, all this stuff's been taking place for quite some time.
Yeah, I suggest you guys put on your website the book called The Dying Citizen.
The Dying Citizen.
We'll take a look at it. We got to be careful. We're not going to agree with everything with every other group of people that might want to connect with us. So that's okay. As long as we're together on the main principles is the key. We won't agree on everything, but that's okay. But we'll take a look at it.
But if it's a good book, we can include it in our reading material if it's a good
book. Absolutely. Yes. Send us some information on that. Send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. And then we'll consider that. If you go to our pages here under our educational tab, we have a tremendous amount of information here. We have our founding documents. We have the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, biography, state constitutions. We have issues for today, a lot of different things. We have educational videos. We got lectures and essays. We have the 5,000-year leap up here. We have that both in audio and in print, okay, the 5,000-year leap by permission. We have a lot of stuff. And if there's a book that really will be helpful, we'll consider putting it up here. But we'd have to look at it. We'd have to get some of our leadership to read through it, and then we'd have to take a vote on it. Some material, it's automatic. We don't even have to think about, like American history lectures. We have this guy, I think it was Thomas Woods that did that. He's got about 20 lectures up there, really fantastic, about American history. We have common law lectures. On our common law lectures, we do have some problems with the individual running that, Bill Thornton. But generally speaking, he's on the mark. His main problem was that he doesn't see God as the king of the court. He sees man as the king of the court. But it is God that is the sovereign of the universe. It is God who is the sovereign of the court. And the court's the king's bench. The king is God, and the king's bench is the people. So we're supposed to represent his will in a court of law and deal justly with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy when we make our decisions in a court of law. And that's how our system is.
Yes, we are the children of God, that's why.
We are what?
We are children of God.
Children of God, amen. Our founding fathers felt that they were the new Israel, and that's why they chose, and people will argue that, but you just go look at the seals of Jefferson. Jefferson and Franklin were given the job to create the seals. And they created the seals, two different seals. Matter of fact, there was a third one. Who was the other one? I think it was, I forget who the third person was. They created a seal too. But Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin clearly laid us up as Israel, as the children of Israel, laid up the seal to represent them. And that's what we were. We were being, taken out of Egypt, so to speak, spiritually speaking. And which is the world, and to be brought into the kingdom of God, to have a nation, one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice.
Another thing, I think a better way to say why the reason they choose that is they're thinking about the spiritual Babylon.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now Babylon is ruling here in the United States. It's called civil law. It's Babylonian law, Justinian law,
yes.
Roman law. It's all the same thing. Roman law comes from Babylon. It's Babylonian law. It's all the same thing. It's the control of the citizen by statutes. We don't live under the statutes of men. We never gave them authority to write any law to control our behavior. We only gave them authority to write laws in certain situations to control them, to control government agencies, and therefore they have 57 different codes and one, you know, for different agencies. You know, I think it's code 3, USC 3, which is statutes that control the presidency. There's statutes that control Congress. There's statutes that control every single agency, the FBI, the CIA, everything. There is codes to control those people. And commercial activity, interstate commercial activity.
I feel like the FBI is an unconstitutional agency anyways.
Yeah, there's no charter. He's right.
I'm sorry, what was that?
He said the FBI is unconstitutional, and I heard that. There's no charter for the FBI.
Yeah, there may not be, and that may be true, whether there's a need for that. You know, that's where the Republic Review comes to play, where the idea of the Republic Review, where we put ourselves together with that group, where we support them, and their idea basically is to have a review of our republic, all the laws, not a constitutional convention, nothing to make new laws or anything, but to go through all the laws and remove all the unconstitutional statutes that we find throughout all of the what federal government has written up and put out. And then find areas where maybe we should reconsider giving Congress certain powers to write certain things in certain areas, like, okay, maybe the FBI is a necessity. I can see how it can be, but it does need to be controlled in a certain way. I know that there must be statutes that control them, or at least USC 18 and 20, and what's the other one? USC 18 and I forget the other number. But anyway, 28, okay? That probably controls them, because that controls a lot of the agencies. That really runs into a lot of the different agencies as far as their codes and regulations and so on. And of the codes and regulations, only about half of the codes are actual law, which are called statutes, and half of them are regulations. And there's not too much a difference, really, between the two, because bear in mind, even the law, they don't have the power in a court of equity to fine or incarcerate. That power is not given at all to any judge, because you can't take a liberty away from anybody, whether they work for the government or not. You can't take their things and you can't take their liberty without due process. And even though they're operating under rules and they can write the rules and regulations and the statutes and what they think should be the punishment, but it's up to the people to say yay or nay to the law that they apply towards those individuals in a court of law, if it becomes a criminal thing. If it becomes, of course, in most cases, it's really, it's not criminal, but it's more civil than criminal, and there can be penalties to be paid, loss of a job, They tell them they can't work. What do they call that when you can't work for a month or two or whatever? Those kind of penalties can be applied in order to make correction within the agencies. But you can't take people's things and you can't take their liberty.
Yeah, how we get rid of the people who work for the agencies that are not really elected by the people or that? Like the people who sign employment contracts for the government.
People who sign what?
You know, okay, you heard of the U.S. Jobs.gov?
Uh-huh.
They have, once you click a specific position you want to be working for the certain agency,
so someone...
they also want you to it's a signed contract.
Well, look at anybody who works for a government agency has to work under the equity, under the statutes that apply or the regulations that apply to that agency, and they must obey that. And if they don't, there is a penalty to be paid. But they can't be charged criminally. They can be charged criminally in that court of equity, but once that happens, it now has to open up to a court of law, because now the people have to come in to make the decision to see if they even like the law. Or what they make the law as they go. They just make up another law because they're going to operate, you know, out of their own hearts, coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and look at the situation. But yeah, people can pay a certain penalty, that is required by statutes for violating their regulations that they're to be operating under. There's also commercial activities. Same thing, same thing goes there too. And once there's illegal activity and commercial activities, of course, that has to now fall under law and not equity. Once the charges are made, there has to be indictments if you're going to do criminal against the individuals. And so the people have to decide. But again, it always gets back to the same thing. But if you want to get rid of anything, whatever is unlawful or repugnant to the Constitution, you cut the head off that snake of that particular situation, whatever it might be. You cut the head off, and the whole snake dies. And that's the key to get rid of it. So a lot of times, I think you may be talking about appointments too, maybe? Because
I think he's talking about non-government organizations that have contracts. And the government has used that to do a lot of wrongdoing, because they could always say, it wasn't us, it was that contractor over there.
Well, yeah.
They're under federal contract, and they...
Yeah.
They've bastardized the whole system, Ross. You know, even the CIA and the FBI, they've blended their stuff. They're all outside of what they're supposed to be doing. You know, the CIA was for foreign stuff, and they're operating here. This whole system needs to be reset and redone, and it has to stay. We have to go back and just stop everything and then redo it. And I do believe that will happen. The way it's going to happen is the funding is going to disappear. That's going to be the biggest thing that kills them, because these guys are not going to work too long if they're not getting paid. You know, so.
Yeah, I feel like what happened is the people who work under the appointment, people who are in the cabinet.
Yeah, I know. You're talking about the civil servant. What do they call it? And they can't even fire them.
Yeah,
that's something they put in later. What do they call them? And there's like 200 of them in Washington, and it's something that's only recently been put in. I don't know, but listen, we got to get going on. We got like 7 people waiting here, so I want to give somebody else a chance.
Okay, I was saying that I looked at some jobs. I wanted to work for the State Department, like the Foreign Affairs Officer.
Uh-huh.
Why we have for that Foreign Service officers? Why we need them?
I don't know. I'm in trouble. You're kind of like breaking up.
It's because it's echoey sometimes. Yeah. What name the officer again? What kind of officer?
It's foreign affairs.
Foreign affairs. Okay. Well, I don't know. You know, look, there's lots of different things that are necessity, and as long as it is not repugnant to the Constitution and the authority to exercise that authority to create those positions, then it is what it is. Look, there's a lot of things that have to be created and done in order to really get these government agencies going. And if you want to know what the law is, it's written right there in the statutes. Now, we do need people who are educated in the statutes and the regulations, you know, so each one of it is a specialty. Each USC, each U.S. code is a specialty. And, you know, you have individuals who will give advice to the president so he doesn't break the law. And I think it's the USC 3 that controls the presidency. So he operates under certain laws that Congress had put together. The same thing with Congress. There's also laws that control Congress. There's laws that control every single government agency. okay? Law enforcement may be collected together, because I haven't really looked deeply into those. It's a lot of work. I mean, some of these are 1,000 pages, some of these are U.S. codes. But we do need people who are educated in that area to deal with that. And that's where a lot of these lawyers that are educated in law school, where they really have to take specialties to be able to apply those codes. And those codes even go down into the state. People become lawyers and operate within the state level. People become lawyers and operate on the federal level. And that's a necessity. And they, of course, can counsel and assist individuals in a criminal matter. But they say that it's a fool that, what is it, a fool that represents himself, or a doctor that takes care of himself or something.
As a fool for a patient.
Yeah, fool for a patient. But let's take a lawyer. I don't know about the lawyer side, because I'll tell you what, no one knows your case better than you. I mean, if you're guilty of something, you're going to want someone else to represent you. But if you're innocent and you're fighting in your case, whether it's civil or criminal, let's say, no one knows your case better than you. And if it's possible to be able to represent yourself, I think you should. I think we should teach our children by the time they come out of school to be able to represent themselves in a court of law and understand the legal system and the whole government, the governmental process.
Also, we can represent ourselves in front of Congress.
Well, Congress has no authority over us. What they're doing with Bannon is against the law. They don't have no authority over Bannon. He's one of the people. He doesn't work for any government agency. They have no power, authority to require him to come speak before them for anything.
Well, they're requiring him to come speak for the position he was serving on Trump's election.
Well, then that could be a thing.
That was the loophole they used to give him a subpoena.
Right. That sounds possible. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a little shaky. We got to get moving on. There's a lot of people.
Thanks, Ross.
I want to bring up something else that Ross kind of touched on, and thank you, Francine. They're called the Selective Senior Executive Services. Obama put in hundreds of them. Ron Flick said Trump should have fired them all, and they're still there. Well, Trump could not fire them all because they're lifetime appointments. What Trump did when he was in there to curtail them is he cut their funding. That's how you get rid of them. You cut their funding. And so, of course, now they're getting paid again because you got this jackass in there. But and what happens with this senior selective service or whatever it is there is it's their job to carry the documents to Congress and the Senate. And guess what? If they don't do it, there's nothing that agency can do. So they actually end up controlling the agency, and they're all no good. They're all communists, basically. So we should get rid of that whole idea, because it's baloney, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how they started that or what they decided to make it, you know, when this senior executive service came in. I think it's a fairly new idea.
It's called a senior executive schedule staff. That's what that is.
Yeah, and it's no good. They're abusing it, and they're using it to control things, and they should get rid of it. But,
right, we've got to move on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Gerard,
real quick, Gerard, did you make contact with Jim, or did Jim get a hold of you?
No, as a matter of fact, if they're on here, Jim and Carl should call me, because we're both going south, and we should talk about maybe carpooling.
Okay.
I'll try to get him, you know.
I spoke with Jim earlier, so make sure you guys connect. But go to the next caller, because we have quite a few people there now.
Okay, so I'm just going to hit next, and I know some have been in here a while. Michael from Michigan, go ahead, or Pennsylvania.
Oh, hey, Gerard, I guess you're talking to me.
Oh, it jumped on me. Go ahead. I thought I was going to get Michael, and it brought you up from the bottom. It's weird. Go ahead.
I didn't get in earlier. How's your sister doing?
Oh, she passed away.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, they
killed
her.
I'm sorry, Gerard.
They murdered her.
Oh, gosh.
And it's a sad, sad story. And it's typical, though. I went over it a little bit because I want people to be aware that when you go into the hospital, if they can call it COVID, which they will, everything's COVID, because don't forget they're using that PCR test that has a 98% false positive, right? So then they put you on, then what they do is they don't use their medical degree, they use Fauci's protocol. And there are certain things in the protocol, and it's all evil, demonic crap. One of the things that's in the protocol, see, they won't allow budesimide, which actually heals the lung, but instead they give remvenzador, I'm not pronouncing it right, remvenzador, and that shuts the organs down. And when she went in there, she said no remvenzador and no vent. Well, 2 days later, they gave her remvenzador because they made $5,000 on that shot. And they didn't even tell her son, who was her healthcare proxy. And we said, who made that decision? They said, she did. We said, how could she make a decision? She was at a 60 oxygen. She was not capable of making decisions. But they did it anyway, because it's all money-driven. And it's all driven by the doctors are run by the administration of the hospital that's making money on all this stuff. So it's all about money. So unfortunately, she did pass. They gave in the last day that she was alive. We got them to do intravenous C and a couple of other things and NOX and that, but it was too little, too late, and so she died. You know, she was it was horrible what they did to her. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, my problems seemed insignificant in a sense compared to that. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well, I fought with them for 10 days, and the family kind of drugged their feet. I don't think they realized how serious it was, you know, and it's too bad. And a lot of this stuff she should have had worked out before she went to the hospital. I don't think she ever thought she was going to end up there, you know. You know, and so she didn't have a medical power of attorney, and she had to make her son her healthcare proxy, and she should have thought about what she was doing a little more than she did, because I don't think that he was, you know, they were able to lead him around, you know, the primrose path as they were killing her. And you know, it was not pretty, you know what I mean? It was not. So anyway, be forewarned, and main thing is don't go to the hospital, because they're prisons.
I've got heart and lung problems myself, and I've got a go in for some pulmonary tests tomorrow, but I am on budesimide and nebulizer and some good stuff here, and I'm definitely improved from the way I was, but I don't have COVID.
Where do you get your budesimide?
The doctor prescribed it for me.
Well,
I've got severe asthma and chronic mild congestive heart failure, where I've got some fluid backing up into my lungs from time to time, and I couldn't even climb the stairs. I was just
gasping. They raised the price on you budesimide ridiculously.
Oh.
And budesimide actually heals the lung tissue. It's one of the few ones that work really good with COVID.
Yes.
And we got one of our members, Ollie Smith, that was on it, and they took the VA took it away, and they gave him this new inhaler, which is basically for allergies, but it's not addressing his problem. And when he went to look, when the pharmacist said it was $300 and something for one inhaler, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
And they will not prescribe him that thing, and he's going to have trouble this winter. That's why I was curious as to where you were getting it.
Sure.
See what you're paying for it. Maybe you could get back to me what you're paying for it, because I'd like to find him a source. And I'm sure we could get him a prescription from some doctor. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's important. That's a very good steroid inhaler that actually works with COVID.
Yes, so, it does.
Anyway.
Anyway, let me change the subject entirely here.
Okay.
I've got some real serious problems with a federal bankruptcy judge. I don't know if I should name her or not, but her name is Patricia Mayer. And I've called in from time to time. I'm the guy that's been fighting Berks County here on this property tax issue, I guess now going on about 9 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
They bankrupted me back in 2013. I filed a affidavit of non-abandonment and some documents in with them. They left me alone. And now they came back on October 5th and posted my house, which the incredible, insane sum of $73,000 in back taxes. They didn't do anything during the pandemic. They waited for the Supreme Court to issue that order, lifting the evictions back in August, and they just went hog wild. And, of course, Pennsylvania is a non-judicial tax foreclosure state, and it is absolutely brutally insane what they do to people here. We did have a man about 3 miles from me whose house was posted back in 2018, and for whatever reasons, he committed suicide after they posted his house. So it's just a nightmare what goes on here. In any event, I had a choice. I sat the health problems, and I was forced to file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy to stop the tax sale. And right. I kept a note of it, what was going on. And this is the first time I've seen 150 homes sold at a tax sale like that, which they were here back at the end of October. In any event, I've had to file for bankruptcy, and because I have a little more than $800 to my name at this point, and I won't go into why, but I am truly bankrupt. I filed a fee waiver, which you can do under Chapter 7, to have the fees, the $338 fee waived, to open up the bankruptcy case. So I filed all the required paperwork, and the next thing I know, this judge is firing back and denying my fee waiver. And she writes up a little order for me to start paying in installments. Well, you know, right now the way things are, I don't even know how I'm going to make it through the winter on $800. I've had to apply for LIHEAP and the various programs just to keep the lights and heat on. So I filed a motion for reconsideration. I filed an affidavit of no income, and I filed all of the requisite information again, and she fires back and denies my fee waiver, claiming that I did not cite make a legal citation in my motion for reconsideration. So
well,
I filed an
you're
appeal.
Not using you're not using a lawyer?
No, I'm pro se.
Well, then that's her problem, because she's supposed to, if you didn't file it, she's supposed to tell you that. Because you're not a lawyer, and you're not expected to be a lawyer, and so she's supposed to inform you on the law. And so what she should have done is said, you need to do that, and she should have let you correct it.
Move it to federal court, of course.
It is a federal court.
No, it doesn't matter, but no, but it is an administrative court. He needs to move it into which is an equity court also, but into a different court.
Right.
You need to move it into the federal district court for cause, because they're violating your right of due process, okay?
Okay,
That
may be my next step, but here's what I did.
Wait long, because remember, you don't have that much time before the hammer comes down on you. You only got so many days to.
I've got to get this done by the 2nd of December.
Okay, so you understand.
So anyway, I filed an appeal. I named Judge Mayer as the appellee, and I filed the appeal with the United States District Court.
There you go.
Now, it was received. They sent me a copy. Timothy McGrath, the clerk, sent copies to the judge. And Judge Gibson in the District Court in Philadelphia.
Well remember, your main position in that case, okay, it has to be, you have to have a constitutional, well, you're in a federal court system anyway, but you have to have a constitutional position and a constitutional violation. And you got to go to the due process. There's quite a bit in the Bill of Rights that you can pull out here.
And being denied equal access to the courts, all the rest of the stuff going on.
But the main thing is, there's no such thing as a non-judicial foreclosure. They can't foreclose on anything without taking you through due process. A non-judicial foreclosure, you know, goes around the due process because they can't win in a court. That's why.
New York claims to have a judicial foreclosure, but they're using in rem. And so it's non-judicial. They're all doing it. What they do is they convert the deed to their name, and they foreclose. And this is something that they started, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, And they're doing it illegally, unlawfully, because it, I don't think it was ever passed as a law. They said, oh, here's another way that you can get the money quicker and sell the property without having any encumbrances on it, because they convert the deed and they put it in the county's name. And so then once the county gets it, what they do is they evict you as a scofflaw tenant. And they go, this is against right. the property. It's not against you. It's in rem, like it's an abandoned ship, and it's 100% unconstitutional. So but Pennsylvania says we don't do judicial foreclosures. They start right off telling you that. Meanwhile, New York sneaks it in under their in rem process of foreclosure, which is every bit as bad as what Pennsylvania is doing. You get no day in court.
No, it's completely violates the spirit of the entire concept of what America
yep.
is. It's contrary
Absolutely.
To it.
And, you know, this is something that we need to do, because as times get harder and things get shut down, they're gonna come in and scoop the property away for the people. They do this every age. It used to be the kings or whatever it was, but they scoop everything back into their coffers. The bankers and stuff, they foreclose, and what they do is they take the land back away from the people, and we'll go back into a feudal system.
If we ever really got out of it.
Exactly. Well, we had the appearance of getting out of it, but you're right. We never really did get out of it, did we?
Yeah.
As long as they're going to call you a tenant on the land, then I guess you're not the landowner then, are you?
Well, so, it's a very interesting thing. Yeah, I've good Lord, it's so ass backwards. We could spend all night on that one. But
Yeah, it's no doubt. But you know what? People got to get together, because if you can't own property, then you don't have all of our rights in America are couched in property rights. And guess what your first piece of property is? It's your body.
You. That's ourselves.
Right. And this business with the shots and all that, they're violating that too, aren't they?
They absolutely are.
Yep, they're telling you what you can do with your body and what you can't do with it. So you don't even own your body. So if you don't own your body, you definitely can't own a piece of land. So it's our rights start in property rights. That's, you know, because how could you be free to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness if you have no place to exercise that? What are you going to do, exercise it on government property? You know, I mean, if I'm renting you a place, I could put stipulations, no this, no cats, no dogs, no parties, no blah. You're not free. You're under my rule then, right? But anyway, it is a problem. You got to move fast now to take to secure your property, and hopefully, you know, you'll get a sympathetic federal judge that can slap this judge. I mean, why wouldn't she waive the fee, the $300-something, what's she making a year? You know, I think that she should be reported. You know, you should make reports on her, because she's
Yes, I was thinking about going to Samuel Alito. He's the Supreme Court Justice for this district.
Yeah, I would put complaints against her, because
yes.
she's not being judicious at all. She's being a bitch, or whatever you want to call her. You know, it's not good. And she's praying.
No, it isn't. Listen, my phone is about to die here, so I'm going to have to get off before the battery cuts out. You'll think I hung up on you, but I didn't.
Okay.
And thank you, guys. I'll be in touch with you, let you know how things go.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Nice hearing from you. Hope you
yeah.
do. Hope you do good. Yeah. God bless you, too. Okay. I'm going to click Michael from Michigan, who you were supposed to be up, and it jumped over you. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, Jared. How you guys doing tonight? You just said something very interesting there. You had the boldness to actually say that that your person is private.
Yeah, right. Was that treasonous? No.
that's amazing. But I just wanted to go to the basics here, where John was having a discussion with somebody earlier, and if we could just get ourselves to understand that in the beginning God created the heavens and earth, and he gave man dominion, attaching, of course, I already used the word dominion, but then I want to bring in the word sovereignty, but then I want to bring in the difference between legal, lawful power, and authority. Mm-hmm. If we all had a true understanding of this, we'd understand that this corporational fictional government with this three-letter agency doesn't have any jurisdictional power over us at all.
That's right. That's right.
So, don't we really have to understand when we're talking to somebody that believes and thinks somewhat like us, but if they don't understand the difference between legalism and lawfulness,
remember one thing, Michael, and that is that civil law is not legal or lawful. In America, or anywhere really, you know, ultimately, because look at man is not to rule over man, and that's what nations do, you know, the men rule over men. They're not to do that. And again, there was only two times in history that we're aware of that you know, God ruled over. One was Israel, and the other is the United States. I mean, we haven't done a very good job in bending the knee and living under His law, and you know, we've lost our knowledge. We just haven't been paying attention. We're too busy tweeting, I guess. Those phones got to go.
Okay.
I'll say it over and over again. Those phones got to go.
Okay,
it's destructive.
Okay, I guess I really didn't clarify myself when I said illegal as opposed to lawful. When I said legal, my intentions were to attach the word civil to legal as being lawful.
I'm sorry, attach the word what?
Attach the word civil to the word legal as being that...
The fiction believes to be illegal. And, you know, look, as long as people, reality is the way one perceives it. And as long as the bulk of the people believe that fiction is law, it is.
My definition of the word is mine, and your definition of the word is yours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, it was nice talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Okay. Got Amy up next.
Wasn't that Michael?
That was Michael, but now Michael's gone. Amy's up.
You said thanks to Jim.
Oh
yeah. I wasn't sure if that caller with the real estate issue was from New York or Pennsylvania, but there's a program like in New York City called ERAP. It's like a... what do you call it, from the COVID-19 period, it helps with rent. So there's still counties in New York that haven't used all the funds, so there's still funds available. You know, I don't know if he's in one of those counties.
Well, he was in Pennsylvania, that fellow that
they were taking his house. Okay.
Which is a whole horse of a different color. But, you know, they might have... some kind of COVID funds, you would think. I mean, he applied for bankruptcy. That should almost make him eligible for everything out there, anything out there. You know, whatever program. I don't know. He might have. He's been defending himself for 7 years or 9 years, so he knows his way around the court. But you do make a good point. There might be some federal money there. Wouldn't it be refreshing to fight the federal government with federal money? I don't know if they'll allow you to do that, you know what I mean, to cut off your nose to spite their face. But it's a good idea. You know,
To be honest, I think it's actually kind of like a communist policy, but...
Yeah, it is. It is.
A lot of people were put in a bad place because of the scamdemic, so they should take advantage of it if they can, because there's nothing else they could do.
I've often thought of applying to get money from George Soros, using kind of progressive terminology to fund NLA, and maybe he wouldn't know the difference, and he'd send me some money. You know, that would be sweet. But anyway,
yeah, I think there's a lot of with the kind of organizations out there masquerading to try and get people's money under different. You know, you don't really know who they are. So,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for that.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay, now I have Jim from PA. Were you in there before, Jim?
No, this is another Jim from PA.
Oh, okay. So go ahead, Jim. You got a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted NLA to know about the speech that Robert Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr. gave in Milan, Italy, on Saturday, November 13th. I wonder if anybody heard about it. It was really dynamic. Now, I understand that American media did not cover it.
Of course not. Why would they? I did see it on alternative media, and they're not going to you're never going to get it here unless you're on some kind of alternative media, because they're getting worse and worse as things go, as the deep state goes down. They're getting more and more desperate. And Robert Kennedy has done really good work, and basically, you know, you hear these people like him, and they're laying things out. You would think that it would be over, but it never is. I mean, they're making some of the stuff he put in there was should have ended the question right then and there. You know what I mean? But they keep steamrolling ahead, and because they have the ability. See, this is where we need to take the news media out and redo them and find them and get rid of these corporations, these guys that are running the news media that are committing omission, which is almost worse than lying about it, because when you omit it, you don't even talk about it. So there's no chance that it'll ever get out.
Aiding and abetting.
Yeah.
They're guilty. Hang them.
Yeah. So that has to happen. I'm hoping that's going to happen at some point.
Me too. Me too. Hey, where is the speech? Do we have a link to it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you Google it, not Google, don't Google it, because Google won't give it to you. I think I saw it on Best News. I'll look around and see.
If anybody has a link to that.
What date was that, the 13th or the 14th, Jim?
It was the 13th of November.
13th of November, yeah.
Yeah, if anybody's got a link to that, or if you find it, Gerard, send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Everyone on the leadership level will get that.
Well, John, DianaWest.net was where I found the whole text, and I've read it. And it's very, very informative about, you know, things I just don't know about, like how the CIA is involved in all these. They call it Event 201.
Yeah.
And the CIA has been engaged in 73 coups.
Well, they owe the allegiance to the elite, to the New World Order, the elite.
This Event 201, is where they all the media and the corporations, the new CI director, deputy director, they all met and discussed this pandemic thing. So it's a very informative speech.
If you want the rest of the story to that, then go in and look up Dr. David Martin and the accusations he makes and who he names. Of the RICO and the felonies that they committed to put this pandemic in, and the people that were funding it and the people that are making money off of it, rather, that are actually paying Google to keep their name out of the public. And he did a fantastic job, Dr. Martin, Michael Martin.
Yes. And, Gerard, a quick question. Do you think there was, I don't know where I got the information, but I believe American media did not cover this. I mean, how could the whole, nobody in America cover this this speech by
That's an indictment. That's one of the things that they're going to go down with for stuff like that. Well, you're right. How could you take an event that was publicized worldwide, or it should have been anyway, right?
I thought so, yeah.
And they're not covering it. CBS, NBC, all the big ones. I mean, some of the alternatives to news had covered it. You know, OAN is pretty good. I bet you OAN did cover it, but not everybody watches OAN, One American News.
Okay.
So somebody's going to have to, at some point, these charges are going to have to be made against the media. You know, because they are really our biggest enemy, truth be known. Because like John said, if it wasn't for them, they're aiding and abetting, this stuff would never fly.
Yeah. Hey, Gerard, I heard somebody talking about going south. Now, I'm going to D.C. on Wednesday for that Supreme Court hearing. Did you hear about that one?
No, for what?
Supreme Court to consider Mississippi's abortion ban and move that could challenge Roe versus Wade. That's on Wednesday. I'm going to be down there.
Oh, very good. You could bring us a report back.
Yeah, yeah. See what I can do. But anyways, that one quick thing. There was a question. I think John answered the question about restoring the middle class. I wanted, about the currency or the gold and silver. But mm-hmm. I think going a step farther, more specific, is ending the Federal Reserve and then end the fiat currency.
Well, it's already bankrupt, so it's only, I don't know what they're propping it up with, but they're bankrupt, believe me. I don't think they made their last payment didn't get made, so something's going to happen very soon.
Okay, I'm going to get ready for my trip to D.C. Good night.
Okay, have a good night. Okay, I'm going to do one more because we're over time. I'm going to grab Heather Lee from Michigan. Go ahead, Heather Lee. If we didn't put you to sleep. Are you there, Heather Lee? Heather Lee. Well, I don't hear her. I think I did this one time last week, too. All right. Going once. Going twice. We're going to grab Dennis from PA. We got like a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Robert Kennedy Jr. was just on Coast to Coast AM on November 22nd with George Norrie.
Mm-hmm.
He has just written a book about, I can't remember the exact title, but it's about Fauci. It's about Tony Fauci. He mentioned a couple of details. I didn't hear all his comments in the entirety, but he did talk about Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates, that they rotated on many pharmaceutical boards, and they owned up to like 62% of the pharmaceutical companies.
There's so much conflict of interest, it's disgusting.
Right, and somebody just told me today, I was discussing this, and they told me that Bill Gates owns up to like 92% of farms around the country.
Well, farmland, yeah. He's been buying it up.
Something to that effect. So,
well, he's going to lose it all because under that executive order that anybody that's helped, do stuff against the United States is going to lose all their assets. So thank you very much. We could redistribute it back to farmers.
And then, like I said, I didn't hear all his comments, but Robert Kennedy Jr. is also an advocate for the release of Sirhan because he said he had nothing against Sirhan. Sirhan did not shoot his father. He said his father was shot from behind, like four times from behind.
Look at those things are all scripted, done ahead of time, all planned. It's disgusting. And let me tell you something, as far as rotating between the FDA and the big pharmaceuticals, they've been doing it for years. The CEOs of these big pharmaceuticals will take a sabbatical, and then they'll go sit on the FDA. Now, that's a big conflict of interest. I mean, they still have stocks in the company whose drugs they're approving. And that's been going on forever. I know. I've known about that for over 20 years, and it needs to stop.
I just wanted to add that because I just got that information recently. I just wanted to add that into the program. So thank you very much, and good night.
Okay, good night. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I'm going to go. It's already over, 10 minutes over. So thank you, everybody. I'm sorry if you didn't get in. Come back next week, and I'll try to take you first. Thank you. Have a good night. God bless.